Blog Talk Radio.
This is a control grid to track and trace and make us second-class citizens. They are going to decide what sites you visit, and they're only going to allow a couple thousand sites. 99% of the web will be off-limits.
As always, by my great co-host Denise and Bobby, and we're very, very happy you're here. Thank you. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704, and I'll open up the chat room now. What a busy news day. This budget fiasco is like being on a roller coaster. The part that really bothers me is they're using our troops as pawns. So, you know, they're playing little head games with them, and that's despicable. Obama, pay the troops. That's not the only roller coaster either. The Wisconsin election is another one. Now it appears ballots that were previously uncounted are turning up. Some were shredded, but most were still intact. Prosser is now leading. Japan had another massive earthquake today, followed by a huge, almost equal aftershock. News coming out of there is really slow. It's actually suspiciously slow. Israel is seeing some terrible events. Today, a school bus was hit by anti-tank rocket, and Israel, of course, they deployed their Iron Dome, which successfully caught and destroyed a short-range missile, by the way. Israel did retaliate for the strike on the school kids, and now Netanyahu is saying there may be war with Gaza as early as tonight. We'll have a report on that in a bit. An alleged Muslim convert opened up fire on an elementary school in Rio de Janeiro today. And we'll have an update on that story, too, as well as an update on the story about the pigfoot sent to Representative King. We have the context of the accompanying note. There's also more stories we'll get to today as well. They're just coming flying at us. There's all kinds of breaking news. But before we begin, I'd like to properly introduce my fabulous co-hosts. These women are top-notch researchers, great journalists, analysts, and most of all, my friends. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Denise and Bobby. Hi, ladies.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, welcome, welcome, welcome. Good to see you. Just before we were coming on the show, there was breaking news out of Wisconsin that, actually, let me read it to you. This woman who was the election commissioner, she kept all the account on her personal computer, but she didn't ever send them in. So check this out. After Tuesday, this is from Christian Snyder. After Tuesday night's Wisconsin Supreme Court election, a computer error in heavily Republican Waukesha County failed to send an election result for the entire city of Brookfield to the Associated Press. The error, revealed today, would give incumbent Superior Court Justice David Prosser a net 7,381 votes against his challenger, attorney Joanne Kloppenburg. On Wednesday, Kloppenburg declared victory after the AP reported she finished the election with a 204-vote lead out of nearly 1.5 million votes cast. On election night, AP results showed a turnout of 110,000 voters in Waukesha County, well short of the 180,000 voters that turned out last November, and 42% of the county's total turnout. By comparison, nearly 90% of Dane County voters who cast a ballot in November turned out to vote for Kloppenburg. Prior to the election, Waukesha County Clerk Kathy Nicholas was heavily criticized for her decision to keep the county results on an antiquated personal computer rather than upgrade to a new data system being utilized statewide. Nicholas cited security concerns for keeping the data herself. Yet, when she reported the data, it did not include the city of Brookfield, whose residents cast nearly 14,000 votes. Throughout the day Thursday, officials' canvas numbers flipped the lead back and forth between Prosser and Kloppenburg. While many believed a recount was inevitable, the addition of Brookfield votes for Prosser could push the justice lead beyond the legal threshold that would trigger an automatic recount. Under state law, Kloppenburg could still ask for a recount up to 3 days after the official canvas, but would have to pay for it herself. And we'll have more details as they become available, but right now it's a roller coaster. So it looks like these votes are going to be cast, that this woman never sent in the information. And what do you think of that, girl?
Well, George Soros must be in town.
Well, he's up in New Hampshire, so he wasn't able to come and straighten out all the votes, and now looks like Prosser is going to win.
I'm being facetious.
Me too. He's up in New Hampshire at Brentwood.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Along with Nancy Pelosi being the keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're having to take over the world party or something.
Yes, ma'am.
We got some news coming out of the Middle East. Yes, we do. Netanyahu, he's not happy.
No.
We got a stalemate in Libya. We have Libyan rebels killed. The general, Ham, is saying we're going to have boots on the ground. So, yeah, let's start with Netanyahu. You heard what happened there this morning, right?
Yep. Still going on. It hasn't just been this morning.
Yeah, well, this morning, an anti-tank rocket came out of Gaza and landed a square shot on a school bus full of kids. One boy was very, very badly wounded. I don't even know his condition. People are flipping out. So there were more than just that one rocket. There were a lot of rockets.
There were three rockets. The Iron Dome intercepted two, and the third one it did not, which hit the bus.
Okay. Anyhow, they did deploy that Iron Dome. So now they have been doing some retaliatory strikes and taking out the people that fired the rockets. Also, Netanyahu made a very troubling announcement. I'm going to read you this announcement. This is from Zero Hedge. Just to make the cluster flock complete, the following news from BBC News file across the tape. The main news agency website in Arabic at 16:31 GMT on today, April 7. Following urgent caption. Gentlemen, spokesman for the office of Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, tells Mayan, I do not rule out the possibility that Israel will wage war on Gaza tonight. Or more metaphorically, the proverbial flame in a fireworks store. Surely this last straw will send the S&P limit up or down. Someone has to have a brilliant idea that Bernanke can print his way out of this one as well. That was from Zero Hedge. But, yeah, the main part I wanted you to hear was, I do not rule out the possibility that Israel will wage war on Gaza as early as tonight. So.
Well, he's already, Netanyahu's in Germany. And,
okay.
You know, so this is called Operation Cast Lead. It's been going on for a while, but it is a retaliatory strike. The Israeli Air Force set off some helicopters with machine guns on them and hit some targets. so he's not and he'll do it all night long if he has to. You know, he's just said, this is it. I'm not ignoring Iran anymore. I'm not ignoring the Palestinians. This is it. You know, he said he's going to defend Israel at all costs. The other piece is, you know, this has been going on for about 45 days on and off. So where is the UN Human Rights Council now? Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, you got Obama out there is head of the Human Rights Council. Okay? Come on, dude. You know, what are you doing here? Nothing?
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I can't believe it. I just...
Now, where... I mean, really, where... This has been going on for 45 days. On and off, on and off, on and off.
So what do you think's going to happen?
Well, I think it's going to escalate, and I think it's going to get nasty. Especially since it was discovered that Iran does in fact have a nuclear weapons plant that was discovered on satellite video.
I heard something about that. They found a factory that's making centrifuges.
I told you that, earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You want to explain that to our listeners, what's going on there?
Well, I mean, you know, many, many countries out there have been placing sanctions at the behest and the pressure by the United States to not allow any sales or movement of any kind of nuclear weapons parts and chemicals to Iran. So Iran has gone to the black market, and they're getting them. So they, you know, they say they're doing this. They're building nuclear power plants. Well, yeah, they are doing that, but under, you know, undercover and behind the curtain, they've been building weapons. We've known this. I've tracked a couple of those scientists. Anyway, our government, along with, well, actually our CIA, along with the Mossad, has in fact found by satellite photos where those plants are. So now it is my contention that they're going to have to send some people in there in some kind of form or fashion to see what's actually there. But they've identified three buildings and three bunkers.
All right. Now, under the circumstances, with everything that's going on surrounding Israel, you know, and all these countries all in an uproar and they all hate Israel, the last one is that Saudi. We had spoken about it. If anything happens with Iran and Israel, Israel has to have a way to fly over one of these countries to even return to a retaliatory strike. But if the countries are in the hands, but if the countries are in the hands of rebels and anti-Israel, you know, terrorists, then maybe now is kind of a good time for this to go on as far as, you know, Israel is concerned, because if Saudi Arabia falls, that's the last bastion. Saudi Arabia, they went to Russia and China looking for help now. They're not even trying to depend on us.
Well, I told you that a couple of weeks ago. That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, we don't. They don't always need planes for attacks. I mean, you've got surface-to-air missiles. So, you know, having places to land and refuel, you can bet that Netanyahu has those. I mean, there are, even if you're in an enemy country, there are still safe havens. But you don't really need that when you've got surface-to-air missiles. I mean, look at where we were firing our Tomahawks into Libya. You know, we're doing that from ships out in the Mediterranean.
True. I found another thing just before I, you know, got on the air here, and I wanted to talk to you about this. You, Denise and I had spoken about this earlier, and we just kind of alluded to it with each other. But check this out, Denise. This is from Reuters. The United States is preparing for its first test of a sea-based defense against longer-range missiles of a type that officials say could soon threaten Europe from Iran. Much is riding on the event, including confidence in the Obama administration's tight timeline for defending European allies and U.S. forces deployed against the perceived Iranian threat. The last two intercept tests of a separate ground-based missile defense aimed at protecting U.S. soil have failed. The planned sea-based test this month will pit Lockheed Martin's company's Aegis shipboard combat system and Raytheon company missile interceptor against their first intermediate-range ballistic missile target, said Richard Lena, a spokesman for the Pentagon's Missile Defense Agency. Previous, such sea-based drills have been against shorter-range targets. Intermediate range is defined as 3,000 to 5,000 kilometers, or 2,000 to 3,500 miles, a distance that would put London, Paris, and Berlin within range of Iran's westernmost soil. The coming test, dubbed FTM-15, is to demonstrate a capability against a class of ballistic missiles and is not country-specific, Lena said in an email reply to queries from Reuters. The layered multi-billion-dollar anti-missile effort also focuses on North Korea's growing arsenal of missiles that, like Iran's, could perhaps be tipped with chemical, biological, or nuclear warheads. The window for the Aegis shoot-down attempt runs to April 30th, Lena said. He said the Aegis-equipped ship used in the test will be in the South Central Pacific, and the ballistic missile target will be launched from Kuijin Atoll, part of the Marshall Islands in the Central Pacific. During FTM-15, Aegis BMD, that's ballistic missile defense, will demonstrate for the first time its capability to negate the longer-range threats that must be countered in a phase one of the U.S. planned bulwark for Europe. J. Michael Gilmore, the Pentagon's top weapon tester, said in a congressional testimony last month. Ricky Ellison, head of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, a private booster group, described the test as proof of concept for the Obama administration. It is tremendously important that it's a success, as this is exact architecture is to be deployed in Europe by the end of this year in the first phase of Obama's plan, he said. The article goes on, but I wanted to tell you, we had spoken about these tests not really being tests.
That's a fact. Nothing is really a test. It is essentially a live drill, but they're not really, they have targets. And, you know, you're not going to spend the kind of money for a yippee-skippy type practice. But you can bet that the launch of the Iron Dome on the date is no accident. Because we're going to have to, there are going to be a handful of countries, including some in Europe, they're going to have to make use of that, as well as Israel.
Yeah, well, yesterday was the anniversary of that April 6th movement, too. So I could see why they would want it out before that date, just in case.
May 15th, you got that call to action for the Palestinians.
Yeah, tell our listeners about that. Remind them.
Well, May the 15th, I think it is, or the 16th, I think it's the 15th. The Palestinians have been given through Facebook a call to action for all of them to go back to Gaza in an effort to show solidarity. And then you also have that flotilla happening at the same time. So
yeah, you want to tell me a little bit more about this flotilla? Now, it's the same people, right? Code Pink and Dawn and Ears and all of them?
Exactly.
Rafi?
Exactly. And
of course,
you know, the last found, you know, it was also supposed to be humanitarian supplies, but yet we found weapons.
Yep.
And this time it's being coordinated. The flotilla is being coordinated with Iran.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So.
And we still allow these people to bounce around the world, right?
Well, you say we.
We as the United States citizens,
well,
you know, they could revoke their passports if they start an international crisis all over the place.
Well, but you don't have anybody in the White House that's on Israel's side, so who's going to stop it?
True. Yeah, Israel knows that too. Israel is tired of playing with this jerk. They have not been very nice. I've been reading some stories, you know, people's blogs and posts and stuff coming out of Israel. They despise Obama.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm seeing the military doesn't really have a whole lot of love for him lately either.
No.
No.
Not
no.
After, you know, I'm not gonna pay the military if the government shuts down unless you allow us to continue to fund Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second. We'll get back to the Libya thing. I want to talk about this budget thing. Not going to pay the military. Now, even all of the last shutdowns, the military got paid. It's up to Obama to decide what is and is not essential. And it looks like he's decided that paying our troops, even though he just started a war, a third war, he's not going to pay these troops. Look at our troops. Our troops are young people. You know they got babies at home. You know, half these soldiers got a wife and maybe a kid or a pregnant wife home. What, you know, that's the last thing they got to be worrying about over there. They got to be worried about their own safety and the mission. They don't need to be worrying if the baby's going to have diapers or if the rent is going to get paid or if their pregnant wife can get to the doctor appointment for, you know, gas money. I think this is pretty cruel and despicable to be using the troops' pay as a pawn in this fiasco. Now, the continuing resolution will buy them all another week to play their stupid little games, but it will fund the military until the end of the year. So it's kind of like taking it out of this budget and putting it in its own separate thing, making sure that they get paid, and then they can deal with all the rest. They got another whole week. Obama's threatening to veto that because he wants the Planned Parenthood, and Harry Reid even came out and said it.
Yeah, he did.
He was out there. He wants Planned Parenthood, and he wants all the cap and trade that they snuck in this bill. Cap and trade would not pass on its own. Nobody wants it. But he's been piecemealing it in each of these bills.
Exactly. But he's also saying, if you're going to, I'm not going to pay the troops unless I get Planned Parenthood. Well,
yeah.
We're talking about money. So what he's essentially saying is he's splitting hairs on what's essential and non-essential as far as government money goes. So now he's saying that Planned Parenthood is essential. It's an essential part of the government, because if you're funding it, then it's part of the government organization.
Mm-hmm. But
so the troops are not essential, but Planned Parenthood is essential.
Don't we have laws that say that we're not supposed to be using public funds to pay for abortions? They say that they do other services there.
That's where they're splitting hairs, Joanne, because now they're saying that very rarely does Planned Parenthood perform abortions.
Planned Parenthood is a surgical place. They don't even do...
Of course.
Yeah. And, well, you know, at least they're not fighting over the Brokeback Cowboys now. But this is absolutely despicable. Now,
he vetoes it. He owns it. And if he doesn't fund those troops, you know, if he vetoes it and he doesn't fund it, you watch what happens to the military.
I'm hoping the military goes on strike. The leaders put them all on boats and bring them home. You know, they're keeping their end of the deal.
But you bring them home, and what happens?
Maybe they would arrest every one of those jackasses in our government in D.C. That would give them something to do. Just arrest every one of them that has tried to bust up the United States. But let's think of
this on a bigger scale. If you got the troops that are pissed off, okay, and they leave the field and they go back into their camps, their respective camps, or back to their respective planes and boats and ships and carriers and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the Middle East?
Oh, the Middle East. But the Middle East is pretty much lost anyhow. Their
it's
rules
imploded.
Of engagement.
And there's your movement.
Yeah.
There's
your
caliphate.
Absolutely. But it's already happening whether we're there or not.
It
Obama's
all comes
not
down
letting them.
To caliphate or Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. But, yeah, I mean, this caliphate's happening anyhow. The rules of engagement. Look at, they already have bases set up for training for Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. They can't wait. They're itching for the soldiers
Look
to leave there.
Look what just happened in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah.
Those were 6 Muslims.
Yep. Shot up schools and did it for Allah, the religion of peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anybody burning any books in Rio. They just walked in there unprovoked and just started killing those children.
That's right. And then we had a synagogue that was bombed today, and everybody's saying, no, it wasn't bombed.
Oh, yes, it was. Of course it was. They told the helicopter to leave and stop filming.
Okay, so you know what? If everybody takes a bird's-eye view of what's going on globally, it's real easy to see what's happening. And if you don't see what's happening, you're just not paying attention.
Right. And it is part of the bigger thing. I saw an article today, a few minutes ago, actually. I put it on my Facebook. And it says how Obama's been planning the shutdown for over a year. That's why he never put forth a budget, because he's been hoping for this.
And then we had a U.S. embassy convoy attacked in southern Lebanon today.
I didn't hear about that. Tell us about it.
It's actually the second time in a week that A group of young men attacked a U.S. Embassy convoy with stones during a visit to a southern Lebanese city. It's actually in Sidon, S-I-D-O-N. Nobody was hurt in the incident, but it's the second time because there's an anti-American sentiment going on there. So this is the second time that the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon has been attacked.
Yeah, well, Ahmadinejad came out today and said that it's possible to have a Middle East without the U.S. or Israel there. It's now a possibility. So, yeah, this is definitely a caliphate, and it's going to happen whether our troops are there or not. Obama's not letting our troops fight. Also, I wanted to talk about boots on the ground. Obama lied.
Of course
General
Hamm.
General Hamm came out today.
Why even question it, you know? You know it's a lie every time you talk.
And we also know that we... Because the documents are now coming out, that the declassified documents are coming out, that the Oklahoma City bombing was done by Muslims. Thank God. I've been saying that since for 3 years.
Yeah, you had said that. I remember you saying that.
And just now, it's finally somebody is saying it.
Yeah, the FBI came out and got off the documents and said, yeah, they had known about it. And some ABC reporter knew about it, too.
Exactly. But, you know, and it actually came from the ABC reporter into the FBI. But it was sponsored by Iraqi Special Forces and, you know, 7 Afghani freedom fighters out of Pakistan.
Yep.
They caught one of them, finally, but we don't know where the other ones are. So, you know, you've got 2 Americans and 1 Pakistani. So we still have a handful of them out there. But we know, or I know, they were all in the hotel together in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and like that temple today, they said it was a malfunction of some equipment. That is crazy. It was not a malfunction. It was a pipe bomb, like they said. They had the bomb squad there. They had helicopters in the air. And while we were watching the live feed, the helicopter pilot was saying, they're telling us to get out of here. They want us to stop filming and leave. So at that point, he was waiting for his station manager to call him back to let him know whether or not he should continue filming or to leave, and they finally told him to leave. So,
if there was nothing there, why would they wave him off?
Well, the last visual they were showing on the live feed, the last video that there was, the last bit of video that we could see on the live feed, was there was some SWAT team people on the roof of the building next door, and there was an item that looked like a rolling pin. I believe it was a Torah, but it had a string attached to it, and the string was hanging down off the building, so they were afraid to touch it. They didn't know if it was a Torah or if it was another bomb, and then they made the helicopter leave. So, you know, we're just stuck in midair now. But anyhow, back to the boots on the ground. Army General Carter Hamm said ground forces wouldn't be ideal, but maybe a possible way to aid rebels, says current operation largely stalemated. This is from CBS and the Associated Press. The United States may consider sending troops into Libya with a possible international ground force that could aid the rebels, according to the general who led the military mission until NATO took over. Army General Carter Hamm also told lawmakers Thursday that added American participation would not be ideal, and ground troops could erode an international coalition and make it more difficult to get Arab support for operations in Libya. Hamm said the operation was largely stalemated now and was more likely to remain that way since America has transferred control to NATO. He said NATO has done an effective job in an increasingly complex combat situation, but he noted that in a new tactic, Muammar Gaddafi forces are making airstrikes more difficult by staging military forces and vehicles near civilian areas such as schools and mosques. The use of an international ground force is a possible plan to bolster rebels' fighting forces loyal to the Libyan leader, Hamm said at a Senate Armed Service Committee. Asked if the U.S. would provide troops, Hamm said, I suspect there might be some consideration of that. My personal view at this point would be that that's probably not the ideal circumstance, again, for the regional reaction at having American boots on the ground and not what it would entail. Barack Obama has said repeatedly there will be no U.S. troops on the ground in Libya, although there are reports of a small CIA team in the country. Secretary of Defense. Yeah, small CIAD. I know. I heard that. Are you serious? I can't believe you're reading this. All right. It says Defense. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates told lawmakers last week there would be no American ground troops in Libya as long as I am in this job. Him disclosed that the United States is providing some strike aircraft to the NATO operation that do not need to go through the special approval process recently established. The powerful side-firing AC-130 gunship is available to NATO commanders, he says. Other strike aircraft, including fighters and the A-10 Thunderbolt, which can provide close air support for ground forces, may be requested through U.S. European Command and approved by top U.S. leaders, including Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Ham said that the process is quick, and other defense officials have said it can take about a day for the U.S. to approve the request and move the aircraft from its bases in Europe. Ham said recent bad weather and threats from Gaddafi mobile surface-to-air missile systems hampered efforts to use aircraft like the AC-130 and the A-10 to provide close air support for friendly ground forces. He said those conditions contributed to the stalemate. Since the U.S. handed off strike missions to NATO, U.S. planes account for only 15% of NATO planes now doing the air attacks. Okay. So we're at a stalemate. Gaddafi is a military man. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to run a war. This isn't his first rodeo. We got a bunch of ragtag rebels on the ground. Now we know who they are. We know they're Al-Qaeda and Hamas, and they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're not even Libyan. Most of them are Egyptian or Turks or Jordanians. There's a few Palestinians. Yeah, some South Africans. But they're not Libyans. And, you know, we don't want the Libyans getting in the way. We want them to think that Gaddafi's going to stick around because then they'll stay out of it. There's an operation going on in there. It doesn't have anything to do with humanitarian aid. If it did, it would have been won by now. So there's no reason we couldn't get in there, blast it, get out of there.
You know,
but
you don't go to war and you don't send the kind of resources that we have sent over there for humanitarian aid. You know what?
Good point.
We just don't. If it's a humanitarian thing, then, you know, you send in the UN forces. I mean, that's who essentially they sent in to the Ivory Coast, and you see how well that turned out.
Yep. Yeah.
So the whole point of that is that it's much bigger than we're being told.
Yeah, well, we use these rebels to get in there, and now that we're in there, check this out. It says there's a lot of danger and confusion at the hospital. Libyan rebels near Ajibaya killed in NATO airstrike. This is from the BBC. Rebels in eastern Libya say their forces have been mistakenly hit in a NATO air raid. Doctors in Ajibaya told the BBC at least 13 rebel fighters had been killed by the strike on rebel tank position. The BBC's Wire Davies reported chaotic scenes on the outskirts of Ajibaya with rebel forces in retreat, reportedly being hit by NATO airstrikes. It's the third such incident in recent days involving international forces deployed to protect Libyan civilians. One rebel commander told the BBC he saw at least 4 missiles land among rebel fighters. Many people have been killed and many more have been injured, he said. Civilians are reported to be fleeing the Ajibaya in the thousands, according to the latest Wire reports, after rumors spread that pro-Gaddafi forces were preparing to attack the city. Meanwhile, a relief ship carrying emergency supplies of food and medicine has arrived in the besieged rebel head city of Misrata in western Libya. So see, now they don't need the rebels anymore. They're going to kill them.
Sure.
They know what they're doing. We already talked about this. We already talked about the reason. We already know it's gold and money and currency that's going on. We know that they just want to smack Gaddafi around. They don't really want to kill him. I am under the impression that the kid is going to be in charge pretty soon, Saif. He's already over in the UK telling them that he's going to run a more moderate government. He's nothing like his father. I spent a lot of time reading his thesis. The kid is a flat-out stone-cold globalist. He graduated from the London School of Economics.
He didn't graduate.
Well, he had a problem with plagiarism.
Well, they threw him out.
I think that they gave him, if I read it right, I think they did finally give him a degree. But, yeah, and they gave him, and the father gave, like, $300,000 to the school. So everything was all right after that. But the kids...
He gave him that to get him in, okay?
Oh.
He and, yeah. And then
yeah,
he
well, Go ahead.
And then he plagiarized, and he didn't go to class, and he didn't do this, and he didn't do that. So they threw him out.
Yeah, well, you got to read that thesis. It's all about the globalist structure, the globalist economy, the global power structure. It's pretty much everything we talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to write a thesis on based on what your professors tell you to do. So, so in order to get any kind of grade and pass a class, that's what you have to do. I mean, you would not write something contrary to that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, any college anymore, whether you like your professor or not, you have to write a thesis to please the professor. You don't write it out of real truth because they can't handle that.
Yeah, I can see that.
I just went through that with my son 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, they don't like it if you don't write what it is they want you to write about.
Exactly.
Yeah, however, I'm thinking that, you know, since Gaddafi was minting his own dinars and using gold to back it with, and he was trying to organize all those African countries, plus he has all that oil, and his gold is legit. It's not like he's stolen or anything. It's legit. It belongs to his country, and he's got his own stash. And, you know, that was a big threat to their basket currency. It's a big threat to the U.S. dollar. All these countries would want his gold back to us, since the money that we put out there is not backed by anything. It's all fiat, and so is that basket of currencies that they want to use for the globalists. You know, so that's messing with the oil trade. It's messing with the gold reserves. It's messing with the globalists, the Federal Reserve. It's messing with all of it. So they had to go down there and smack them around. They brought a whole bunch of strangers in there, called them rebels. Half those, you know, a lot of those people, not half, but a lot of those people are former detainees that were picked up on battlefields. So I'm sure that one of the conditions of their release was, okay, go and do this operation. You know, they think they're pulling a caliphate. The people who are running it, they don't care about the caliphate. The people are controlled by a caliphate. That just makes the job easier to control them even more, you know. So what it is they're smacking Gaddafi around. He's not going anywhere. These people are getting stiffed.
That's why you need to have boots on the ground to get them out of there. But, you know, the bigger question is, I don't think any of these world leaders, you know, the European Union or the United States, have any plan to get them out of there.
No, I don't think so either. I'm agreeing with you. Absolutely. You're right. And I'm thinking that the kid is going to end up coming out on top. The two brothers are fighting. What's the other one's name? Denise, it begins with the name Musta or Musada or something. Mustas?
I don't think he had
the two brothers from the second wife. The baby is Saif. The next one up, it's like a M-U-S-S is how it begins. I forget it, like Mustafa or Musada or something like that. Anyhow, he's the kid Musada. He's another one. He's a jet setter. He didn't go to London School of Economics, though. But he is talking about a moderate government, and he wants to take it over. And Saif is the globalist, and he's up there playing patty cakes with all the elitists. So I think it'll end up being, if not separated so that the two of them can lead, I bet you Saif comes out on top.
Well, but, you know, you've got a faction in there that's not going to stand for that. You know, they don't want part of the Gaddafis in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even want any of his inner circle in there. So the whole thing is going to be very interesting in how it plays out on who gets to stay and who gets to go. And, you know, there are other people within Gaddafi's inner circle that have already contacted our CIA and said, hey, you know, help me get out of here because we don't want any part of this. So it doesn't look like these guys want to stick around. And if they do stick around, then, you know, somebody's got to go. It's either some of it's people in the inner circle or it's going to be Gaddafi. But the bigger question is, where's the tolerance level for the European Union and the United States and the UN and NATO? You know, is this going to go on all summer? Are we just waiting to, you know, are we just going to, like, hang around and just bomb a couple of, you know, a handful of targets until, the rebels are truly infiltrated with Al Qaeda, and then we got a bigger mess on our hands. I'm telling you, the end of this summer will not end the way it begins.
Yeah, I am absolutely believing you, too, because look at the way things are going, and look what's going on all around there, too. And that's why I think it's time, you know, that I bet you Israel is going to use this time before the summer to just light it up with everybody. They are surrounded except for the Saudis, and, you know, they have even a tenuous relationship with that. They don't know how Saudi's going to end up. You know, the Saudi regime could fall by next week, you know, if you use what was going on in the other places as a guide. So I don't think that, I think that Israel's out of time, first of all. I think Libya is a globalist effort to smack Gaddafi around. They don't really want to go in there. They really don't want the boots in the ground. They don't care about the people or the rebels.
Well, the thing is that we don't have the boots on the ground to put in there. I mean, we don't have 20,000 troops that we can go into Libya with. Unless we go, okay, Philippines, we're going to have to take 5,000 of our guys. Okay, South Korea, sorry, but we got to take 5,000 out of there. By the way, you know, all those people that were training in Bolivia and Colombia, no, we got to take some of those guys out of there.
Yeah, it might not be a bad idea to take them out of Japan.
Well, we don't have a lot there. We have probably 2,000 or 3,000 there that's helping Japan right now. But we have to keep some assets and some people in South Korea, because now Kim Jong-il is pushing very hard to put Kim Jong-un in there. So that is being, that's hitting
the radar.
That's
got to be monitored closely, too.
I think the old man is getting sick and dying or whatever, and so that is coming back up on my radar, at least.
That's another point, too. Kim Jong-un, the kid, is also a graduate of London School of Economics.
Well, he went through the IB program.
Oh, great. So he's a globalist, too. Yeah, it's coming together. Anybody who can't see what's going on, have another look, because, you know, you got all the Middle East is coming together. You got, now they're trying to pull Africa in together with it. We have the United States.
Well, we've got a major fire going in Sudan, and nobody's really paying attention to that either. And, you know, South Sudan has tried to separate themselves, and there's another war going on right there.
Jeez.
And
yeah,
then we
and
got Bahrain. Then we have Syria. Then we got Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've said it a million times. Our military is operating with their ears pinned back. Why do you think we had those two F-18s crash in the last month?
Why?
They're just being overworked. They're just training people as fast as they can train them, and things are dropping through the cracks.
I don't know.
I mean, if I wasn't the age I am, I'd give up everything I had and I'd go join something. I don't know what it is, but I'd probably go join the Navy.
Hey, girls, there's a question in the chat room. It said, where did Hussein's gold go? Where'd Saddam Hussein's gold go? Did it stay in the country? Did it disappear?
Of course it did.
It's gone?
No. It stayed in the country.
Syria.
Well, he paid Syria to take some of the weapons, but he still has his own gold. I mean, listen to me. He still has gold there. I mean, they're going to keep some kind of foundation to their currency system.
Yeah, you know,
we've got major, that's another thing. We've got major nasty stuff going back on in Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, that's completely reconstituted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that. Iraq is falling again.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, well, you know, the job wasn't done.
No, it isn't. And that's why, you know, we are operating at less than a skeleton crew, so we're hiring private military all over the place.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up about the private military. You watch. That's what's going to happen. We're going to end up having to hire mercenaries.
Well, they're not really mercenaries. I mean, they're private. I mean, it's military, but they're not under our kind of the same kind of uniforms.
Yeah,
they're not mercenaries. I mean, there are mercenaries there, but you know, they're not there as mercenaries.
Yeah, they're 20% American for most of those groups. I know the Blackwater is mostly American, but groups like Triple Canopy and Al and Dynecorp, those are mostly foreigners.
Well, yeah, because we don't have anybody that's stepping up to the game in the United States. You know, you go into the U.S. military in the United States, you're getting all these benefits to go in. But you've got just about everybody in there that the military budget would allow, as far as the military budget goes. But you've got a whole other budget line item for private military. I've got a handful of friends that are retired, and they have been offered big, big bucks. One of my buddies was just offered $260,000 to go to Dubai. He went, I'm not leaving the United States.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I really don't blame him. Oh, boy, we're late here.
You
want
to do a commercial?
Hey, I was just going to say, we're late here. Can you girls stick around? We got to take a quick high break here.
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back, folks.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. The three W's dot theinternationalforecaster.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hi, folks. CT here. I want to talk to you about a great preparedness resource, tomorrowsharvest.com. Whether it's an economic collapse or nature's fury, there's no feeling more secure than knowing that your loved ones will be well fed. If it's time to bug out or just camping with the family, Tomorrow's Harvest offers high quality, cost effective, and long term smart food storage. Get your free sample. The choices are great. From blueberry pancakes to cowboy chili, no one else has the meal variety of Tomorrow's Harvest. They also provide other survival necessities. Check out the various packages and customize your meal supply. Remember, there's no reason for fear today when you prepare for Tomorrow's Harvest. Go to www.tomorrowsharvest.com and tell them you're a freedomizer.
Hey, Freedomizers, have you started your food storage yet? Are you dehydrating your own organic fruits and vegetables? Proof Negative here is going to tell you to check out dehydrate2store.com, where Tammy is going to show you how to dehydrate your own fruits and vegetables so that you can have the best food storage possible. Why waste money on inferior products when you could do it yourself? Easy. Check out dehydrate2store.com.
And we're back live. You're listening to Liberty Underground, the Moretti Report, I'm your host, Joanne Moretti, and I'm joined by my fabulous co-hosts, Denise and Bobby. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704. Give us a call. You know, I'm sure you got a comment or want to ask a question, and I bet you're all a little heated about what's going on with this roller coaster fiasco in D.C., in the budget and the troops and all that. So give us a call. I'm sure you have an opinion. So, girls, is there anything else you want to talk about with the, you know, what's going on over there in the Middle East, or you want to move on?
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing that I got. It says Britain has ironically forced the Libyan Revolutionary Forces to apologize for what is blamed on the Gaddafi regime, which we are fighting. The Libyan Revolutionary Council said it has been pressured to sing an apology to Britain over the Gaddafi regime's role in the IRA attacks and the Lockerbie bombing. The council said its chairman, Mustafa Abdul Jalil, has signed a document on behalf of the nation to apologize for Gaddafi's provision of a powerful explosive Semtex to IRA and his regime's implication in the bombing of Pan Am flight over the Scottish city of Lockerbie in 1988. The revolutionaries, authorities stressed London pressured them into taking responsibility for what the Gaddafi regime had done in Britain. According to council sources, Jalil was forced by the Foreign Office to accept a demand by the British head of the Libyan Victims Initiative, Jason McHugh, for an unequivocal apology on behalf of the Libyan population and a $10 million compensation for each death in the IRA attacks.
The IRA,
well,
now, go ahead, Bob.
If it takes that long to get things settled from just that event, in, you know, over in Scotland, how long is it going to take for anything to get done for the Twin Towers and for D.C. and for the people that died on the planes? You know, I mean, really. Mm. Who's dragging their feet? You know, think about it. In 40 years, or is this going to be resolved just with Lockerbie? And how many people have come and gone since that time? Some people have died without ever knowing the end result. You know, their kids were on there. It's ridiculous. I lived up there in Syracuse. I saw the pain of everybody. It was rough, you know. And these fools are playing games, just using them like a chessboard. Well, we'll take responsibility. No, we won't. Blame me, catch me, you know, the whole thing. It's ridiculous.
I'm kind of floored about the IRA and Libya involvement. I knew about the Lockerbie thing, but I didn't know that Libya was involved with any IRA actions.
Well... You know,
amazing.
Birds of a feather will flock together when they need to. They both have objectives that are ones of destroying and making a massive statement. So you got to expect that they're going to team up now and then.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know that Al-Qaeda had anything to do with the Oklahoma thing either until Denise had told me not that long ago. And now it's coming out that it's true, you know. Good intel there, Denise. Good intel, Bobby. Way to go. I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know Libya had anything to do with the IRA. I knew the Kennedys did, but I didn't know Libya did.
Well, if we find out about that years later, you know what's going on all the time. Everybody's, it's who's got the most money to help out and the most people to do the job, and they don't care. Thieves and murderers don't care who they hang with because they're the dangerous ones. So they can hang out with other ones.
Jeez.
Hey, can I say something real quick about Wells Fargo?
You can say whatever you want to, hon. Go ahead.
Well, Wells Fargo just announced that they're shedding 1,900 jobs.
Wow.
Because mortgage refinancing is slow. Wow. How come I never believe the BS numbers that come out with unemployment and when they say, we've created new jobs? Oh, my God, I just want to say... Quit lying to us every time you open your mouth. But, you know, that's
Jeez.
Just one place. That's not talking about the damages of things that have occurred because of this kind of stuff going on with this many over there in the military or the oil or the wells or the damages on the West Coast from the storms, or the damages from the interior of the United States from storms and stuff like that, and businesses that are lost that will never be rebuilt because there's no money, because nobody had insurance, because that's the first bill that goes. It's just disgusting. And they keep lying and lying and lying. You can't paint a pretty picture with a bunch of shit. I'm sorry.
Phew. There you go. That's our co-host. Don't mind her.
Just had to say it.
Well, good. I'm seeing that you broke the ice. I got a little story for you. If you folks have children in the room, now's probably a good time to tell them to leave for a minute, because there is some slurs in here, in this next article I'm going to read you. And it's from the New York Post. It's written, Pig in a Poke, Representative King threat is also racist. Tell those kids to leave now. Washington. The threatening package containing a bloody pig's foot sent to Representative Pete King, a Republican from, where is he from, Louisiana?
No, Iowa.
Okay. My printer is messed up. It says, was as much a racial assault as it was.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was Long Island. I'm sorry, okay. You're right, it's New York.
Okay. The threatening package containing a bloody pig's foot sent to Representative Pete King was as much racist assault as it was religious hate mail, the Post has learned. The rambling note accompanying the porcine parcel proclaimed that white bitches would soon be naming their sons Mohammed, said Capitol Hill source. The note contained anti-Semitic slurs, called the pig's foot a Jew foot, taunted kiss my black Muslim ass, and said King, who was Catholic, was targeted because of hearings held on the radicalization of Muslim Americans. King, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, received numerous threats over the hearings and has been getting additional security. The congressman's office would not comment on the threatening package other than to say it was cooperating with the investigation and referred questions to the Capitol Police. U.S. Postal Service screeners intercepted the package Monday at a postal facility before it reached King's office at the Capitol. King is slated to testify at a mini version of the radicalization hearing Friday in Manhattan, despite claims by some Democrats that the discussion will spread bigotry. The hearing was called by State Senate Committee on Veterans, Homeland Security, and Military Affairs Chairman Gregory Ball, he's from Putnam, to examine security threats facing New York 10 years after 9/11. The hearing was blasted yesterday in a letter by 11 Senate Democrats who claim some witnesses seek only to inflame hysteria and place an entire faith under suspicion. Ball called the witnesses, including Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, experts on terrorism. Now, that, my dear friends, is a terribly racist incident. The pig's foot, the note, now, the hearings. Anybody who doesn't see that there is an issue in the Islamic faith in conjunction with the Western world probably should go back in their coma because they're not quite awake yet. Yes, there is a problem. Yes, there is a caliphate going on. Yes, it's something that we need to discuss. You all hear the stories. You all know what's going on. You all know a little bit about Sharia. Don't listen to people like Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar. They wouldn't last a minute in a Sharia country. Are you kidding me? They'd be the first ones buried up to their chest and stoned just for their mouths. Me, I wouldn't make it 5 minutes. But, you know, look at that woman who was raped in Libya. She still can't leave the country. Look at the people that, look at women in general, the type of stuff that goes on with these people. Some of them, they can't even take off the burqa. They got the little visor and everything. Like Denise said, they're getting sick. They get no sunshine. They get no vitamin D from the sun. So they're sick all the time. They are no more than property. They are beaten just to get beaten because you're supposed to, according to this book. Their religion, fine. You want to call it a religion, you might want to rethink this. Their religion comes along with a government and a judicial system. See, that's not compatible here. We have one government. We have one judicial system in the United States. We don't have a judicial system and a government for the Muslims or for the Jews or for the Catholics or for the Protestants or for the atheists. No, we got one system. None of those religions or non-religion that I mentioned comes along with a judicial system or a government other than Islam. So their job is to kill us. Our job is to stay alive. We can start there. Anyhow, that type of note was extremely racist. It was extremely just gross when you put a pig's foot in there, too. So, you know, we're getting a little overboard. And I don't think that King should be bothered like that, considering the guy's trying to bring some attention to this.
Well, do you think that that's probably the worst that some of those congressmen have gotten in the mail? Because I don't.
Oh, no, I'm sure they get it. All kinds of terrible mail. But that one was just brought to the public. So, you know, it was a good example of why we need to keep our heads up here.
Well,
you
let me give you a scenario.
Okay.
Let's say I'm a Muslim man, and I am from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And I have married three women, and I have 9 children, the 3 women, okay?
Okay.
And then I decide I don't like really what's going on over here, and I am, I'm a person within Islam, and I decide, you know what, maybe I'll contact the United States and see if I can't get some political asylum. So our State Department goes, yeah, you know what, come on over. We'll give you the red carpet treatment, which they have done thousands of times, especially to Somalis as well. But here comes a guy with 3 wives and 9 children. How does that fit into our legal system?
It actually can't, because you can have 1 wife here. Where,
okay,
first of all,
what
don't
are you going to do?
Are
you going to tell him he can't bring 2 of them?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Exactly.
He can't call them his wives. His wife, they could be.
But
that is
why we're having these issues. If you'll understand why Sharia is being forced into our legal system, is because that stuff is happening all the time in the United States, and it is especially happening in Europe. So allow some guy to come here with 3 wives?
No.
Does France?
But wait a minute.
Does the UK?
But wait a minute.
What are you supposed to do?
They'll say, look, you're being special because the Mormons can have more than 1 wife. That's
not in America.
Fair. They're not supposed to, but it's a well-known fact. They even had a daggone TV show.
Yeah, but you know what? They really don't leave their their area, they have their own little system that nobody, they don't really assimilate, it is their little gig, okay?
Yeah,
I'm
of the mind that you come here to assimilate, not dominate. You come here, if I went to another country, I don't think I'd expect the whole country to change to accommodate me.
Part of the problem, what is the State Department, our State Department, or what is MI6 or Interpol or, the UK's Parliament or any of these other government agencies, what standing are they giving these people when they bail out and show up with 8 wives?
Yeah.
You see what
I'm
saying?
And the Mormons aren't coming here to kill infidels and
I agree with
perpetrate
you.
Their caliphate, too.
But
and,
you know, maybe
somebody said,
maybe the guy coming over here with 3 wives isn't doing that either. He's coming over here for asylum.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
Yeah. What you do is you tell him you bring 1 wife and just, I don't know what you call the others, maybe domestic partners or something. Who knows? Girlfriends. But
it doesn't matter if they bring over 1 wife. The guy up in Buffalo beheaded his wife. Isn't that nice? And then some run over their daughters. They don't care about women. And that means if they don't care about their own family, what would they do to the woman standing next to them in line or, anywhere just because she's a woman? Would they turn around and just stab you because you're a woman and you're in their way? you don't know. And I'm not saying this is a fear factor for women, because it's a fear factor for men. They don't care about our society, and because they don't care about their own society. They really don't. If they valued human life, and they don't, they wouldn't achieve and do the horrible things that they do.
That's a good question, Denise. You know, how will they treat women and gay
already
people
happening.
When they come here?
It's already happening here, okay? It's already happening in the UK. It's already happening in Amsterdam and in Sweden and in France and, you know, especially Germany. It's happening big time there. London. So, you know, once those governments have made allowances for their Quran and their religious beliefs, then through the International Criminal Court, or through the International Court, not Criminal Court, but International Court and the UN, then the United States is then pressured to make the same kind of allowances. Once that starts to happen, then you're operating with two sets of laws. And that's
When bad things begin to happen.
Exactly.
But no, you come here to assimilate, not to dominate. And I like the way that Bobby asked that question, too. If they are used to a society that does not value women, what's going to make them all of a sudden value women? Plus, we're getting snookered because they're calling it a religion when it's much more than a religion.
Well, we know that. But, you know, every war we've ever fought, everything that we've ever done has always been essentially over a religion. When we know that, you know, when it comes down to it, our government was designed around Christian values, okay? So there you go. I mean, the argument would be in any Supreme Court, how do you separate the two?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here, really. I'm not.
I understand. It's good to have both sides of the argument. And, you know, especially if we're like-minded, we have to try to see the other side. Yeah, fair and balanced. There's nothing fair and balanced about me. I have a distinct opinion, and that's just what I roll with.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's good, because you know what? No matter what they say, no matter what they do, if they fall back on Kitman and Takika, we're out of luck. I have that ability. I'm allowed to say this, but I'm allowed to do something else. That's my religion, or is that the government, as they're trying to sneak in the Sharia? So they've got their fail-safe, you know. It's like fingers behind your back.
I mean, do you remember how many people, you know, during the draft, they got religious whatever it was, what do they call it, where they didn't have to go, religious...
A conscientious objector.
Yeah, that's it. Okay?
Yeah.
So there is standing out there. And that's the hell of it all.
Yep. You can get out. You can circumvent anything, and that's what they're all playing the game. It's all a big game to them. Can I add another thing?
Can I just ask one quick question? Can I just make one note first? No thieves allowed in the chat room. It says he's got a metal rod in his leg and it aches when weird weather is coming or an earthquake. Would you just tell us what state you are in? I don't need to know your exact address, but just post it in the chat room what state you're in. And that's, I have a friend of mine who's been keeping an eye on weather patterns and strange things. And if you're in an area, I'd just like to know. Just curious. Okay, go ahead, Bobby.
I want to bring up two things that have come out in the news today. And before you get on to the subject of DC and everything, first of all, Social Security doesn't want to send out those little notices they've been sending out every year to show you what you're going to get when you retire, blah, 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 or whatever, right? Now I'm thinking if they don't want to, you know, to do the job, those people that are doing that job should be eliminated right off the bat. Defund Social Security payroll for those particular people, because if you don't want to do the job and you don't, you know, that you've set a standard for and you want to just change, fine, good. There's no need in doing that job anymore. And there's no sense in So John Boehner should go and cut that right off the bat, don't you think? Right, I mean, shouldn't that be a savings right off the bat for everybody if they don't want to do the job? They want everybody to get more involved and go on the Internet. Okay, that's fine. Speaking of Internet, they want to Facebook and tweet emergency situations instead of the color coding. Okay, one person in one room tweeting all day is not going to cost a lot of money, so DHS, why don't we defund that bad boy? Because obviously they don't have a prayer in answering any problems on any of the borders. They don't screen for anybody coming in and entering the country, whether it's returning from somewhere, if it's a new visitor, or somebody, you know, nothing. They don't do anything there, and now they don't want to take care of security alerts other than tweeting and Facebook. And how many people are still unable to use a computer, either because of their age and their skill level, and they just don't want to go with the computer so they won't know, and things like that. I mean, how embarrassing is it? The most transparent president in history, supposedly, is making everything really cloudy these days, like storm cloudy.
Yeah.
So shouldn't that be defunded?
Yeah.
Honey, I can think of so many stuff that could be defunded, you know, the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, Department of Education.
The Green Initiative.
EPA.
Yeah. I have a list here of what would actually be affected if the government shuts down tomorrow at midnight.
Okay.
All national parks. They would close and cease. Federal judges from the Department of Justice remains open and unaffected. Federal courts open and unaffected. Federal court filings, they're not so sure about that one. Federal courts probation officers, they would close and cease. Public access to courts, if you wanted to go visit the Supreme Court, any of that. They don't know that one yet. The National Reconnaissance Office, which is the vast majority of civilian staff, will stay home because there will be no support services, no cafeteria, no cleaning crews, minimal heating and lighting since most offices will be empty. The National Reconnaissance Office would close. That's national security. The Department of Interior, the National Park websites, they would probably close. The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, they're not too sure about that one either. Homeland Security, the shutdown would impact administration and support personnel. Air traffic control, that stays open and remains unaffected. Department of Veteran Affairs, that remains closed. Customs and Border Patrol, unaffected. FEMA, emergency services only, would continue. The Congress, many congressional staffers have received furlough notices. Members of Congress continue to get paid. Functions operated by private contractors and outside entities are unaffected by the federal budget and will be open for business. Levels of service may decrease if there is not sufficient need for these services. Immigration, unaffected. IRS, no IRS processing of paper tax returns or refunds. That's kind of an interesting one because that's actually a separate entity from the federal government. But anyway, Medicaid, processing of disability applications could be delayed. Medicare and Medicaid personnel who normally answer Social Security questions will not report to work. Military, troops, those fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq will not be paid on time. The troops will continue to earn money but will receive no paychecks. The National Weather Service will stay open. The passport processing will be slower because of fewer workers, but regular passports will not be issued. Only emergency passports will. Regular visas out of Homeland Security will not be processed unless it is an emergency. The EPA would cease monitoring pollution and issuing environmental impact permits. Toxic waste site cleanup would stop. let's see here. The National Institute of Health, no new clinical trials, won't accept new patients. Small Business Administration, approvals of applications for direct loans to small businesses will stop. The White House Visitor Center, that would be closed. The White House Gift Shop, that would be closed.
TSA and SARS? Because Eric Steele Live is saying TSA and SARS.
TSA will work. I don't know about the SARS.
If they are paid, if the SARS are paid out of the White House budget, which they are, they will remain unaffected.
Oh. Yeah, well, all those non-essentials.
The only thing is you can't go visit it, and you can't buy anything at the gift shop. But all other White House functions remain open. Shit.
That's all right. I like it better when they're out of session, except when he does his sneaky recess appointments. But I like it better when the whole government's shut down. I think they should just pay the troops, pay the little old ladies, and don't come back until after the election in 2012.
Good.
That would be my thing. The Congress didn't always be a full time job, you know. They only are mandated to meet twice a year.
Exactly.
Or more if there's a national emergency.
Right.
But it was never intended to be a full time career. Now, they used to go to Washington a couple times a year, and the rest of the time they stayed in their district.
Yeah, but you know, when they went, they would stay for 2 or 3 months and then leave. They could stay for 6 months, but yeah. It wasn't a full-time gig, and they didn't have 50 staffers per office.
Mm-hmm.
Which were lobbyists anyway.
You know, and now that they're whining about all the non-essential employees, I think all government employees should be essential. If they're non-essential, means not important. Not important means we don't need them. So, you know, Cousin Vinny's made-up job and Auntie Susan's made-up job and, you know, just don't even bring them back. Bring it down to the bare minimum. If they were a business and they were doing layoffs, they would have to tighten up their ship. And it's time that we tighten up this ship. They're expanding this government, not cutting back on it. And then to stand there in our faces and call them non-essentials and cry about it. You got people, we got a 27% unemployment rate in my neighborhood. I'm really not thinking that it's breaking anybody's heart that non-essentials are leaving. And they might not even leave. Tomorrow's Friday. They might have it all squared off by Monday. No one misses a day's work. You know, it's all theater. It's all games.
I'd rather see them gone.
Yeah,
because
me too.
If they're gone long enough, they won't get paid because everybody will find out that the government would run more efficient, and that's what they're scared about. You know, right now we know they'll get vouchers that will work like checks, and even if they're not working. That's
well, they'll all get
part,
paid retroactively when they come back. So, I mean, we haven't saved anything except maybe a power bill.
Yeah,
but
so
see,
we're just going to get...
If they find that they can do work without them and everything runs smoothly and, in fact, more smoothly than ever, why would you bring them back?
Well, because you look who you have running the government, for God's sakes. They're not going to, you know.
Oh, that's right. The spendthrift who loves nepotism and leeches. Okay. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
What was I thinking?
Oh, that's a pretty good description. And so what we're going to do is just give them a few paid days off, right? If they come back and they're getting paid anyhow for not even working.
Everybody will get paid on the back end. So it's a load of crap.
Everybody's getting a paid vacation.
Yeah, all we're going to do is not flush toilets and not turn on the air conditioning and the lights and the computers. So what are we going to save? You know, $3 million? Maybe.
And I know the unions are already lining up the lawyers to sue for the laid-off employees.
Well, you have to... Well, you wait till all those people, you know, they don't have to go to work. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to go stand outside the Capitol and protest.
Huh.
Absolutely. There's a major protest about to being scheduled.
And what are they
protesting? And then they'll get their union. then they'll get their union payment, too, because they won't be working because they're not really on strike. They're on layoff. Isn't that wonderful? They're going to get money on both ends again.
That's a fact.
Oh, so this is just more bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we're getting scammed.
Yeah.
We really got to be suckers. I hate hearing stuff like this because I feel like
they might
been...
get time and a half on their union pension. I mean, on their union pay because they're out there stomping around the Capitol building. They're getting paid anyway. They're just not going to get their check for a little while.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
I don't know. Bobby sent me an article today. There's a weird illness going on in China. And this is from the Epoch Times. You guys, you got to hear about this. It's kind of like an AIDS thing, but it's extremely infectious. And it is spread even with casual contact. You don't even have to try at it. Check this out. In a small hotel across from the Beijing Center for Disease Control and Prevention, a reporter from New Express Daily, dressed in an isolation suit, interviewed a dozen unusual patients from different areas of China. Their symptoms are painful and debilitating and AIDS-like, but repeated tests for HIV have come up negative. Lin Jun, one of the patients interviewed in the March 24th New Express Daily report, said he used to be chubby, but now he's skin and bones and his joints have become all deformed. Lin is referred to in the group as Big Brother for his kindness in giving fellow patients hope when they feel hopeless, with some having considered suicide. In 2008, Lin's mother received a blood transfusion at a hospital. Afterwards, she experienced frequent night sweats, numb limbs, aches all over, creaking joints, rashes on her hands, and weight loss. In May of that year, Lin accidentally became infected through contact with his mother's blood. 14 days later, he fell ill with swollen lymph nodes on his neck, sore knees that made clicking sounds, and pain all over his body. He also started vomiting after every meal, and the left side of his face swelled up. In half a year, his weight dropped from 82 kilograms, which is 181 pounds, to 52 kilograms, which is 115 pounds. 3 months later, his wife and child developed the same symptoms. Lin said he went to every major hospital in Shanghai but could not get a definitive diagnosis. He had taken the first HIV test 8 times, and each time the test turned out negative. Then he found an internet blog called The Negative Group, which he learned stands for HIV negative. He realized that writing on his blog were all people like himself with the same kind of symptoms, desperate to find a cure. Several Chinese media have recently reported that the Department of Health in Guangdong Province has confirmed that people in Beijing, Shanghai, and Guangdong have fallen ill after being infected with an unknown virus. The patients think they have AIDS, but they test negative for HIV. Guangdong has organized clinical experts, epidemiologists, and psychologists to work together on these cases. The health ministry has also selected 6 provinces with more patients, including Beijing, Shanghai, Zhejiang, Hunan, Jiangsu, and Guangdong, to conduct epidemiology studies, but there are no results yet, the report said. In most of the 30 cases investigated by New Express Daily for its March 24th report, people said their relatives and friends are also infected. Most of the 30 patients were infected through sexual contact. Some experts diagnosed them as having AIDS phobia. However, the disease seems to be highly contagious and can spread by contact via any body fluid, through kissing, shared utensils, sweat, and even protected sex. Once infected, the immune system appears to be attacked, which results in a decrease of white blood cells and the body's ability to defend against infectious diseases and foreign materials. In the past, official health agencies have only conducted HIV tests on these patients and have not checked for other similar pathological viruses, with HIV results coming up negative. Many patients then stopped taking protective measures with their relatives. Subsequently, all their relatives and friends were infected, many have said. One infected man told the Epoch Times that the disease is highly infectious and hard to prevent. His wife and 2-year-old child both appear to have it. The child has lip and skin blood spots, he said. A retired officer in his 40s told the Epoch Times for a previous June 16, 2010 report that he had been infected with the disease with similar symptoms in 2009 at a get-together at a friend's house. I thought it was just a cold at the time, so I still participated in all kinds of gatherings. Consequently, over 100 of my comrades in the Army, relatives, and friends were infected by me, he said. So I don't know what this strange virus is, but we better figure it out.
Well, there's also one that I think we heard about today, did we not, that's in California that is rejecting any and all antibiotics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a superbug, and they're not even able to...
It's actually a different thing than the superbug, because they're aware of that one.
Yeah, and they said that they're having a hard time genoming it. Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm looking at a release out of Saudi Arabia that says oil prices could skyrocket to $200 to $300 a barrel if the world's top crude exporter, Saudi Arabia, is hit by serious political unrest. This is coming from the Saudi oil minister.
Uh-oh.
Which would mean that...
It's already up.
Yeah, it could actually mean that the projected price... Well, if it's at $200 a barrel... Gasoline would be $6.40. If it's $300 a barrel, gasoline will be $9.60.
Jeez. Well, that's what Obama wants.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Eric Steele Live just said a deli superbug found in drinking water. Can you type into the chat room where that is? Because that sounds like a third episode of something.
Yeah, Eric, do you have a link on that? I had heard about that. But they also, in the Gulf of Mexico, there's a bug, and it's not, they said it's a synthetic that has been able to reproduce itself or something, and it's attacking people. A little boy who had a compromised immune system because of hepatitis C is already dead from it. And it's not like a MRSA. It's a synthetic. They're having a hard time genoming that one, too. I think someone's messing with biological weapons.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've always thought that about AIDS. If you had some biological weapon and you wanted a place to test it, where would you go? You'd go way down into the Congo and try it out there and you know, hope it never came back to bite you. Well, I'm thinking that somebody's messing with germs. Look what happened after Obama visited Mexico when they had that... flu virus.
Yeah.
And last week, Bobby, you and I were talking about this virus that they had released.
Yep.
And it was a flu virus, and they admitted to releasing it. And where was that? It was over in the UK or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're leaving things all over the place. And Lynn's right. Morgellons could come from chemtrails, but other things could come from chemtrails. We don't know what they're doing up above anywhere, and it's not exclusive to the United States. All of a sudden, we have puffs of clouds from trails from planes. They're low-flying, and who knows what they're doing. But, you know, their planetary objective is to depopulate the planet by 90%. Now, I don't know if they want to do it in a year, two, three, four, five. But, you know, they're working it pretty darn hard. It's just they won't have any slaves to take care of them, though, if they depopulate the place. Who wants to work for them after they killed everybody? Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, and, you know, also, a lot of the germs, I know people will say, well, you know, that they've mutated from other germs and stuff, but usually if you were to track the genome, you would take it back down to its original state, and you could see that it was a morphed version of one that had been out there prior. But these germs that they're coming up with, they have no idea how they started, what caused them, where they're coming from. And I'm wondering if somebody isn't messing around with germs and just... you know, testing them out some, you know, it could be us, it could be China, it could be Russia, it could be Venezuela or Libya or any one of them, Iran. You know, so I wouldn't even know where to begin to look. But right now you got this going on in China. And I remember when AIDS virus started, they were calling it a contagious cancer. And they tracked it to some airline steward who had been down in the Congo for spreading it. But, you know, where did it come from originally? And how did it get in the Congo? And, you know, I'm having a hard time figuring out where all these new germs are coming from. Or even if they are new germs. You know, we might have had these germs all along and we didn't know it. So I'm gonna try to figure out where some of it's coming from.
Very over-medicated society, so we don't have a whole lot of our own physiological protections, our own antibodies. You know, so we're over-medicated.
Crazy, though. I mean, when they dig up the pyramids and they dig up some things, they find that there's still things, and there's a mold inside the pyramid that can kill certain people, you know, and they wanted to see the people that died from what, I can't even remember what it was, and they were buried up in Alaska, this one town back in the 20s or 30s. It was smallpox. And they opened their graves to see what the conditions of the body were. Well, geez, oh, Pete, you dummies, you're picking up people that had a disease. They were frozen. The disease is frozen with them. Nothing was getting to it. And guess what? You just released into the atmosphere. Sometimes we dig too much. Sometimes we do too much. Sometimes we play too much. And some people take it as a power play. And they do the most insane things. Why would anybody in their right mind, who knew that those people died from something, dig them up to see the condition of their body? What would fascinate you enough to do that? And, you know, then again, I can see the pyramids being a great thing, but also in those dry climates where moisture, much like our desert valley fever in the San Joaquin and the high deserts of Arizona, is activated by moisture in your body. If you breathe it in through your sinus cavities, you're going to possibly contract valley fever. I have received that. I will carry that the rest of my life. However, those things are in the perfect climate also over in Egypt, you know. I'm never going to go to Egypt because I don't want to be exposed to whatever they've got that is totally different than what we have.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, I am.
I don't know. We gotta watch this stuff. But that thing in China, that's making me a little nervous because they always find a way to get it here. You know, the flu virus came here, the AIDS virus came here. We even had a woman up in Massachusetts not that long ago who went into the emergency room. She was sick, and she died. And when they opened her up for the autopsy, there was a smell of, like, an ammonia. They closed her up quick. She had bubonic plague. They ended up having to close the hospital and everything. You know, and where the heck would she have gotten bubonic plague?
Well, think about how many Chinese workers could be visiting and helping Japan. Just saying.
Yeah.
You know? You just think it to the logical conclusion. You get rid of them, say, oh, you can go over and help Japan for a while. Okay. You think you're going to get rid of them by the what's going on with the radioactivity, but at the same time, you could be infecting the Japanese people. You know, that's why borders are meant to be borders, and people are made to kind of help their own because you kind of want to do that. Remember how things got out of hand in Haiti and they were bringing in all those diseases and stuff?
Yeah, cholera.
Purposely, some of them.
Yeah, you know, that cholera, too, they found out that they were being purposely infected. That was coming from upstream. People had actually put the cholera in the water that was running downstream. So that was an intentional infection. I remember that story.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to take our second hard break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish up. You know, we'll have a few more minutes after that. We're late, but let's take this hard break. And if you guys will stick around, we'll be right back.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. www.theinternationalforecaster.com.
Hi, folks. CT here. I want to talk to you about a great preparedness resource. tomorrowsharvest.com. Whether it's an economic collapse or nature's fury, there's no feeling more secure than knowing that your loved ones will be well fed. If it's time to bug out or just camping with the family, Tomorrow's Harvest offers high quality, cost effective, and long term smart food storage. Get your free sample. The choices are great. From blueberry pancakes to cowboy chili, no one else has the meal variety of Tomorrow's Harvest. They also provide other survival necessities. Check out the various packages and customize your meal supply. Remember, there's no reason for fear today when you prepare with Tomorrow's Harvest. Go to www.tomorrowsharvest.com and tell them you're freedom.
Hey, Freedomizers, have you started your food storage yet? Are you dehydrating your own organic fruits and vegetables? Proof Negative here is going to tell you to check out dehydrate2store.com, where Tammy is going to show you how to dehydrate your own fruits and vegetables so that you can have the best food storage possible. Why waste money on inferior products when you could do it yourself? Easy. Check out dehydrate2store.com. If you have not checked out the Proof Negative show, this is what you're missing. If we cover the news the mainstream media is too scared to cover. The mainstream media wants us to cover how many touchdowns in the latest hockey game, which celebrities don't wear underwear, and the top 10 ways how to spice up your goulash. Sorry, mainstream media. Humanity is at stake. I don't have time for mainstream news. The Proof Negative Show. Here on Freedomizer Radio. 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific. 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern.
And we're back live. You're listening to Liberty Underground, the Moretti Report. I'm Joanne Moretti, your host. And I'm here with Denise and Bobby, our wonderful co-hosts. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704. Give us a call. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Anybody that's in the chat, in the phones listening, raise your hand and we'll answer the call. I love it when we get phone calls. We got about 20 minutes left. So what do you girls want to talk about? Is there any breaking news pressing that we should talk about before we go into other things?
Well, let's see if I can... The IMF, Israel, we've done. This is something that happened the other day, and I'm really kind of scratching my head about it. Officials in Germany said that the German Chancellery has held talks with the Indian government, India, about the plan, and India has decided that it would use another method of payment. And what they're doing is buying oil. God. The German daily Hanselblatt reported that India was planning to buy Iranian oil by transferring funds through Germany's central bank to an Iranian bank in Germany. The French news agency says the German government was unable to stop the deal because the Iranian bank is not subject to international sanctions. The sanctions do not apply to the bank since it is not involved in financing Iran's controversial nuclear program. The United Nations Security Council and Western nations have imposed sanctions on Iran for its nuclear activities, but apparently Germany has not. The United States and its allies fear Iran is developing atomic bombs under the cover of civilian nuclear energy program. Tehran says its nuclear aims are peaceful. But isn't it fascinating that India is trying to buy Iranian oil? Through an Iranian bank in Germany.
It's also fascinating that Germany, who's an American ally, isn't doing the same sanctions as we are.
Well, you know, Merkel, I think, is supposed to be here this week or next week.
Yeah.
And Merkel is not getting positive
reviews.
Public approval at all. They say that she could actually be out.
Oh, I don't know. She's another globalist. I don't think they'll get rid of her. Are
well,
you kidding me?
Know.
She's done more for the New World Order than most of the other leaders, including Obama. But she does keep a lid on things, too.
Yes, she does. And especially
yeah,
she's over here to go visit the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Not much going on in there.
Yeah, really.
Well, maybe
what's
the one's
gonna...
in bedroom. I don't know.
Yeah, was she going to visit President Jarrett?
Wrong facts. I'm sorry.
Hey, did we ever hear any details on Mr. Titcomb? If anybody doesn't know who Mr. Titcomb is, that's Obama's golf buddy down in Hawaii.
He got arrested.
Yeah, can you imagine being him as a kid? You know what they would call him for a nickname? His name is T-I-T-C-O-M-B. Okay, now first of all, it sounds excruciatingly painful. He should have at least gone with Titmop. But... all right, so his name is Titcomb. Can you imagine? Yeah, and then what if he's a junior? What do they call him, Little Titty? I'm sorry. And then he's soliciting prostitutes. I hope he didn't give his real name. And the prostitute ended up being a cop. And I don't even know if it was a male or a female cop. We haven't got that far yet. But Mr. Titcomb was busted for soliciting prostitutes down in Hawaii. And he had to pay $500 to get out of it. So I don't think they'll be going to the 4th of July picnic at Mr. Titty's house.
Well, I don't know, because Obama plays golf with him when he was there at Christmas.
I'm sorry. I just can't get over the guy's name. I get a little chuckle every time I think of all the nicknames they would call him.
I'm thinking of it as... TIT company, you know, and then he gets caught in the company of a prostitute. What was the name of the company? I mean, I could go on.
I bet you his name was better than the name of the escort service.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I wouldn't want to be him as a kid. No wonder he has to get prostitutes. Who's going to marry him and take that name?
Michelle Obama, she does that for everybody. I'm sorry.
I think you just got killed over there on the phone. You all right?
Yeah, Bobby, you still with us?
Yes, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she can't handle bad jokes.
No, I'm having earthquake fun. I'm a little disoriented, so it's all good. You know, we were talking in the chat room because there was a 4.0 here one about a half hour ago.
You know, speaking of earthquakes, are you getting commercials on TV in your state about the drills that are coming up next month for the New Madrid Fault?
No, are you kidding me?
Well, they get them in. They're getting them in Kentucky. I just don't understand why you're not getting any.
Because they don't want us to know, which we already do. It's like, I don't know if you know about this little bit, but in California, when you're in California, they don't tell you as much as what you're. And I've lived in California and Arizona, okay? Whatever goes on in air, if something occurs in California, an earthquake, they don't give you, they tell you how to get a prepared kit every once in a while, what you should have in it for a commercial in California. But in Arizona, the National Guard goes on the border the minute a major earthquake would happen in California to keep the California people from rushing in. Very interesting. And you only know that if you live in both places. There's a high preferential there. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, you
and
know
they
what?
They will shoot to kill.
You know
they
our
want
friend
good
Rascal,
front property.
Mm-hmm. Our friend Rascal is doing those codes that he did. He wrote that program for his codes. He has been absolutely accurate with his predictions. He's predicting a major earthquake for the 8th or 9th of this month, which is tomorrow or the next day, for California. And he even talked about two earthquakes today in Japan, and I was arguing with him. I said, no, that was like a couple of weeks ago they had those earthquakes. And he was saying, no, it says right here, April 7th, there's going to be earthquakes in Japan. He told me the longitude and latitude. And he told me about California being 31, which is the state, the 31st state. And he says clearly his thing says doom. And he's, you know, I just wanted to bring that up. I wouldn't even bring it up because I'm not into that hoogie boogie or codes or anything like that. I'm into Obama's speak code, but I'm not into that type of stuff. But each time this guy has said it, he's been accurate. You know how many times we've spoken of this, and each time it's come out right. You know, so I mean, this guy's doing 100% here. If he was accurate once in a while, yeah, I wouldn't even bring it up. But this guy has been accurate every single time. And then in our chat room, Thief's Not Welcome there, he just said that his leg was hurting him, and it either means an earthquake or a tornado or something. And when I asked where he was from, he said California, and that's exactly where Rascal is saying it's going to be.
That was scary when I saw that, too. I'm like, oh,
yeah, so all you folks in California, get your bug out bag ready.
Head to Nevada, yeah. Though, not Arizona. It's not good for your health.
Yeah, actually, better go to Arizona. The Judicial Watch just got involved in the SB, what is it, 510?
1070.
Yeah.
1070, yeah.
Is it 1070?
They just got involved in that, and they are working on that with Governor Brewer. So that's cool. Also, Eric Steele sent the link, and Lynn sent it up to me, and it says here, deadly Delhi superbug poses risk to antibiotic treatment worldwide. An estimated 500,000 people in Delhi are carrying bacteria highly resistant to antibiotics acquired from drinking water, say researchers. Tests on drains and public taps across the city found high levels of contamination with bacteria carrying the NDM1 gene, New Delhi Metallo-Beta-Lactamase, which confers resistance to almost all known antibiotics. The discovery highlights the global threat from the spread of untreatable superbugs. An estimated 25,000 people die each year in the European Union from antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. The numbers affected beyond the EU are not known. So then the article goes on, but you know, you keep your skin clean. Don't take antibiotics unless you absolutely need them, because your body will get resistant to them and they won't work for you. So make sure. There's all kinds of other homeopathic treatments you can use. Our girl Shine Fox was here yesterday teaching us about a couple of them that you could use. But just make sure you stay clean. If you think your water is contaminated, boil it first. Turn your water heater up. Oh, it was you that sent me that, Bobby. I'm sorry.
I'm not worried about it. What is that weird sound I keep hearing? I thought it was me, but it's not me.
I don't hear it. What is it? What's it sound like?
It sounds like crashing.
Oh, that's just the federal government paying attention, you know, just listening to the show. Don't worry about them. Yeah, you know we're all terrorists now. The teabaggers,
Hey, don't even say that word.
Oh, I love it. Because I love it. Are you kidding me? I'll admit to it every time. I'm a teabag. I'm a tea party patriot. I am the tea party. You are the tea party.
Yep.
Denise is the tea party.
Yep.
Our listeners are the tea party. Every one of us is the tea party. We're all the leader. That's why they can't pin us down, because each one of us is the leader. I love it. Yeah, but we're all terrorists. People who have independent radio talk shows, they're definitely on the terrorist list. People who believe in the Constitution, the pro-lifers, they're all terrorists. Returning military, they're definitely terrorists. We're all on the list. So if you're hearing a strange noise,
we
that's just
the
a recorder.
We were on the list in Napolitano's second week in the DHS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they keep putting that list out, and it keeps expanding, too. You know what else bothers me, too, speaking of the Tea Party? Harry Reid. He comes out and he says the Tea Party is losing membership and they're not a threat anymore. And then he comes out and bashes us about being obstructionists and he can't get anything done. And Boehner is beholden to us. So which is it? We're either significant or insignificant.
Has anybody checked him for Alzheimer's lately?
Has anybody checked him for a pulse? Reid.
Oh, Reid.
Yeah, Harry Reid. Dingy Harry.
Alzheimer's.
I think they're all
Alzheimer's.
Medicated up there.
Oh, we know Obama is. Jeez, okay.
Yeah, Ibogaine.
Yeah, well, his medicine he gets from the street. I think Harry Reid might get his from a doctor.
They all go in and get a daily shot of something.
Well, you know, with all of them being doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs there, you know, one can write a prescription pad, and another one can get them out of the hot water. They got it down to a science. they are not fooling anybody about what they're doing up there. They got their little nest going, and they're just rocking it and chipping away the taxpayers' dollars by doing absolutely nothing.
They're in a bubble. They don't even look out. They have no clue how the rest of the world operates. They have no idea what we're thinking, what we do, nothing. They just stay, and they tell the same stories to the same people day after day after day. They're only surrounded with their own. They don't go out of that comfort zone at all. So any information they have, they only got it from each other. Nobody leaves the bubble. You know, the only time they go out is to go campaigning, and at that, even that is strictly controlled.
Well, yeah, because their respective caucuses, you know, the Democratic caucus gives them all the talking points, and then they have a training class on how they're supposed to answer questions.
They train for that doublespeak?
Absolutely.
Well, that explains why it's so prevalent.
Chuck U. Schumer came out and said it in that conference call 2 weeks ago. You know?
Oh, yeah, I remember him saying that about the caucus, told him to use the word extreme.
Exactly.
He's extreme.
You think?
He's extremely annoying. Yeah, I think so. Jeez. So what do you think is going to happen tonight? I know that meeting started almost an hour ago with Reid and Boehner at the White House. Is Obama even at the White House?
Yeah, he's there.
Present.
He's not running the streets. He didn't have to go have dinner with Al Sharpton or anyone tonight.
Maybe it is party night. Good Lord, it's so hard to keep up with them all.
I don't know. Hey, did you see those stories going around about the scars on the back of Obama's head?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that one. What is it, girls?
Yeah, he had a haircut, and he got a really close-cropped haircut, and you can literally see lines in his haircut that look like they could have been healed scars where the hair didn't grow. And they're pretty big, too. It looks, you know, like somebody who had, like, the back of their head taken off and put back on.
Is
you know, it could have been from being a kid
line?
Get stitches in his head. Yeah, if you look at, Vicki Neeson has the pictures on her Facebook page, as a matter of fact.
He only allowed certain sides of his head to be photographed.
Oh, yeah?
Is it three series of six lines or anything like that?
No, they look like, you would look if you had the whole back of your head taken off and then put back on.
Oh.
Yeah, they're serious looking scars. If they're true, you know, but I've seen them now a couple of times from different angles. Yeah, Vicky's got a whole bunch of...
Have you seen Men in Black?
No.
Is there a giant cockroach in him?
I don't know, but I'm wondering, you know, did he have, like, a head injury when he was little? Did he...
A lobotomy.
Wouldn't that be in the front?
Well, it depends upon how small the brain is that they had to go get.
You gotta kill Blubby.
I'm gonna die tonight. That's gonna be too funny.
Yeah, but it does look like that he had a serious head injury. You know, I don't know if you know
that
he had maybe brain surgery or if you know maybe he just fell when he was a kid and got stitches or something. But they are very long, thready lines.
See, I'm thinking his mother just grabbed him by his ears. That's why they stick out so bad. And just banged his head on a wall until he woke up.
Bobby, I think there must have been some incident at the DLC in Chicago.
Really?
Oh, you think he got hit with one of those chains or one of those studded belts or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Still didn't wake him up.
I don't know, but you know, I just found it odd because, you know, you don't see scars like that very often. But where he got that real tight cropped haircut, it was... It was kind of very, very obvious.
I gotta see that.
You know, or maybe
gotta find that.
Maybe it's something with those kids. You know, that inner circle. Those kids.
You think he's one of those MK Ultra experiments or something?
No, you know that whole thing that's circulating now in Chicago.
Oh yeah, I was wondering about that. I was wondering if he was one of those kids. That sex scandal about the priest being transferred from, and they were pedophiles. And what they did was they sicked him on the black kids in the poor neighborhoods. Instead of prosecuting them or taking them out of commission, they just swapped them around and they sicked them on those black kids. And they were just using them for sex slaves. They were even had them on the public payroll on and the daily thing. They had the summer programs for the kids.
Wasn't it kind of Reverend Wright kind of program, the summer program?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Faith Alliance program, and it was a youth program for the inner city youth. And there was different, you know, faith running it. And it's been going on for 40 years. So I'm wondering if he was one of those kids. I put that scar thing in the chat room, by the way, if anybody wants to see the link with the scars. But, yeah, I'm wondering, you know, I'm thinking that guy, Frank Marshall Davis, might have molested him anyhow. I've always thought that. You know, he's a little weird.
Is Louis Farrakhan married?
I have seen photographs of him with a veiled woman. But I don't know who the woman is.
Or is it a woman? You can't tell. That's why they want everybody to wear burkas, so the boys can have their boy toys and no one will know the difference.
Oh, my.
Well, we'll have to... You're a little goofy
never
tonight, huh?
Though, huh?
Well... We're coming up to the end of the show, so is there any final closing comments? You're praying for the end of the show. Bobby's just going to laugh us out there. She got the giggles tonight.
You know,
I'm sorry.
You know, I can't remember the last time I laughed living in the Obama Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it is a zone, too. It certainly is.
Clearly a zone.
Yeah, and he's just, it gets worse, you know, and this guy, I know he's a puppet, but he's a willing puppet, I think. You know, he's going along with this.
He's got so many favors he has to pay back.
No, you ain't kidding. Can you imagine the favors he's going to have to pay back if he comes up with that $1 billion?
Oh, I'm not even talking about that. We got favors he still owes people in Chicago, for God's sakes.
Yeah, well, imagine what's going to happen to this country. If he owes out $1 billion for people getting him reelected... Anybody who re-elects him needs a smack in the head anyhow. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Don't fall for that a second time. And I'm glad about Trump, too. I'm glad Trump is all over this. And I'm not saying I'm going to vote for Trump. I'm not going to. But I am so thrilled because there's a man that's untouchable. So what if they call him a loon? He's a loon with a whole lot of money and a whole lot of power, and it's going to just blow off him. You know, you sit there and you see some peon MSNBC host trying to make a fool out of Donald Trump, and Donald just brushes them off like they're flea flickings. All right.
The meeting tonight with Boehner and Reid at the White House is scheduled for 8 p.m., so they may be showing up there right about now. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they got a minute.
He's got to wait. Obama finishes his dinner or something, I guess, and takes the dog out and... You know,
you got to wait for the dog. All right, say goodnight, ladies.
Goodnight, ladies.
Goodnight, ladies.
All right, folks, that's it for us. I hope you enjoyed this show. Remember, we're Liberty Underground, the Moretti Report, and we're here Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 3 p.m. Pacific. Would like to thank all our listeners, all the callers, even though you didn't raise your hands, everybody in the chat room, and I'd love to thank my wonderful co-host personally. Stay tuned, because coming up next is Empress Helene. Today you'll meet her friend, /guest, Ditch. I knew a biker that had that name, Ditch. And then, of course, at 9 p.m., the big boss man will be taking over the studio. Proof Negative will be here, and he's got lots of entertainment, and he's got a ton of news for you. Everything's going so fast, I'm sure he's going to blow you away with everything that he has. So stick around for all of that. And we're going to close out, as usual, with
your Empress has heard you, dear readers. And
this is a control grid to track and trace and make us second-class citizens. They're going to decide what sites you visit, and they're only going to allow a couple thousand sites. 99% of the web will be off-limits.
and freedom of speech. Politicians seem out of reach. You can find them nude on a beach. Lots of rights we had done were breach. Ask Pelosi, why not impeach? These sides are flowing with greed. All they see is green in between. Men feeding the sheep with TV. Gully up, you still don't believe?
Your Empress has heard you, dear readers, and she agrees. It's high time we had a voice, a forum to share ideas, discuss hot topic articles in GEM, patient rights updates, recipes, grow tips, legal help issues, and yes, cannabis comedy, because laughter is the best medicine, especially after you've medicated. Friends, you can now tune in, turn on, and catch the buzz on the Empress Hour. Southern California's soon-to-be number one medical marijuana internet radio talk show, hosted by yours truly, Helene, the Empress. The Empress Hour is on Thursdays from 5 to 6 p.m., that's Pacific Standard Time, on the freedomizerradio.com. I want you to join me each week. Let me know what you want to hear about as a writer and entertainer with a long career in radio. I am looking forward to hosting this weekly hour that will inform, inspire, and entertain. So the Empress Hour is dedicated to being your community voice, keeping you current and connected. What's the buzz about? As patients and practitioners, advocates and artists, we will now have a community forum with a weekly medical marijuana show that will be fresh, fair, and fun. I hope you'll join me every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for the Empress Hour on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
And welcome to the Empress Hour. So glad you could join us on this first Thursday of April, April 7th. It is 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, and I am Helene the Empress, and this is the Empress Hour. And we have quite an interesting show for you. I can hardly wait. If you haven't heard already, we have hip-hop artist, master musician, and one of the featured headlines of the Million Marijuana March. That's coming up in May, and he's going to tell us all about it. We've got Ditch, D-I-T-C-H, not like the ditch weed, but Ditch, the man, the music, the marijuana, the march. We're going to hear all about it coming up on the Empress Hour in just about, 10 after the hour. And also later in the show, we will have, if you've ever wondered what it's like to try to open from the ground up a brand new dispensary in California, well, you're going to have a chance to meet Tony. And Tony's opening up Mutual Beneficial Collective in Orange County. The opening, in fact, is this week. We're going to hear from the source himself what that is all about. That's coming up in the second half hour of the Empress Hour. And, of course, we do have our call-in number. Write it down, folks, or put it on your quick dial. It is 347-324-3704. And last weekend, did you have the opportunity to visit HempCon? And if you didn't, why not? Everyone was there. Well, not everyone. I was there. And it was interesting. Actually, it was my first one. I've lived in California for 4 years, and I must admit, this was my first HempCon. I've been to the Kush Festival in Orange County at the Anaheim Convention Center and, of course, Long Beach, a medical marijuana expo sponsored by the Quiggle Healing Center. That was last year. But this was my first HempCon, so to speak. And what is a HempCon like? Well, it's kind of like a circus, and it's kind of like a festival, and there's informational booth vendors, ganja, gizmos, pipers, dispensary, evaluation centers, legal eagles, everything you would want to know about marijuana and hemp, you could really find at the HempCon. And it's quite an experience. And, of course, I was there for the GEM, the Journal for Education on Medical Marijuana. And if you haven't read the GEM, this is your source for medical marijuana news, for events, legal issues, dispensary listings, and everything you really want to know about the medical side of medical marijuana is in the gym. And if you don't get it, please let us know. Email me at helene@thehempress.biz if you're not getting the gym. We want to make sure that you have a full supply every month. And this month, interestingly enough, was the article on marijuana and creativity. And it's appropriate that Ditch will be our upcoming guest because as a musician, he knows about creativity. And there was an interesting article, I think it's, yes, it's on page 62, and it talks about marijuana, musical creativity, and the collective unconsciousness. And one of the statements is, and I quote, "For generations, turned-on musicians have been arguing with straight musicians about the relationship of drug use to musical creativity. Do drugs make you more creative, or do you just think you are being more creative when you are stoned because you have reduced powers of judgment? Does music really sound better, and does it make more sense when we are stoned? Or are our poor little fried brains merely thankful for anything that can cut through the fog? Could all those great artists known historically to have used drugs, such as Coleridge, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, to name a few, have accomplished as much without pharmaceutical reinforcement?" Well, the article goes on to explore some of the positive impacts of the drug of choice by the author, and that is, of course, marijuana. It goes on to say, "As a creative artist, I have written an enormous amount of music stoned and an enormous amount of music not stoned. I feel that in terms of quality, these two creative modes are basically the same. One type of music is equally as good, well-made, expressive as the other. However, there can be no doubt that comparatively, the two modes focus on very different subject matter. I have found that my straight music tends to confine itself to specific stylistic domains, exploring the literal connections between original musical materials and developing a high level of integral relationship between the parts. And my stone music more readily accepts as viable musical materials and expressions borrowed from a wider variety of musical idioms, expanding the stylistic boundaries of the music to encompass a broader range of possibilities." Wow, that's a lot of words. What does it mean? What does it do? Who are those that have found marijuana helps them create? Again, in the gem, it goes on to talk about George Michael, and he's a pop musician, openly uses cannabis, and says the world would be an easier place to live with if cannabis was made available. He also says it helps with the writing process. And others, including Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, James Brown, Louis Armstrong, the Beatles, Neil Young, Sir Mick Jagger, Pablo Picasso, Oliver Stone, Stephen King, Woody Harrelson, Brad Pitt, are also medication cannabis users. Well, what do you have to say about that? Is there a connection between cannabis and creativity? And I'm sure our next guest coming up is going to have some insight on that. And we have a caller. Let's see if he's on the air right now. Welcome. You're on the air with Helene the Hempress. And who am I talking to? I'm talking to myself again. Hello, caller. Are you on the air? Hello? You're on the air with the Hempress. Well, while we're waiting for our caller to find his way back. You know, we always have some kind of technical difficulty on the show. It's kind of a running joke. I thought all that madness would be over in March, and yet I find that, you know, there's a caller on the switchboard, but not to the phone. Caller, can you hear me? Okay, well, please call back, caller, and try again. And that number is 347-324-3704. And I thought, hey, it's the show is not just about the Hempress. It's about hemp, health, humor, and the pursuit of happiness, right? And last week we had a very interesting guest. We had Jen from High Quiggle Healing Center, and we got the perspective of what it's like to be a budtender, to be on the other side of the counter. Budtender, of course, is a slang word that I use humorously, but in fact it is a practitioner, a healer, an expert, and someone whose guidance you will depend on when you are a medical marijuana patient. But on the humorous side, I wanted to dedicate this song to all of my budtenders out there in California and across the country. Take a listen. Well, I don't think it's playing, folks. I don't know what the problem might be. But I hope you're still with me. This is the Hempress Hour. And I hope you have the gem, because this is all about creativity. I, as an artist, a writer, actor, musician, and comedian, have found that, yes, marijuana does help me express, expand, create, and think about things in a different way that perhaps I never did before. And I'd like to hear your thoughts. If you are a creative person, if you are a musician, a dancer, an artist, a writer, anyone in a creative field that has found that marijuana has helped express those things, let us know. Call in 347-324-3704. And looking forward to your thoughts as always. And
your Hempress has heard you, dear readers, and she agrees. It's high time.
Sorry about that, folks. You know, we're feeling our way across this show, and I'm wondering if we do have Ditch on the air. Ditch, are you with us? No. Okay, well, he'll be calling in soon. And Ditch, by the way, is a hip-hop artist. And among other things, he's a very educated fella. I met him at HempCon. And he was very bold about telling me who he was. And I always appreciate that. I like when people come up and let me know what it is they're doing, why they're so impassioned about their art and their music especially. So maybe you'll listen to this song and enjoy a little humor on the Hempress Hour.
The minute you rolled up that joint, I could smell it was a weed of distinction, a real butt bender. Good looking, tastes divine. The THCs, they aim to ease the stress in my mind. So let me get right to the point. I don't get this hot for every pot I see. Hey, bartender, roll a little bowl for me. Do you want to have fun? Fun, fun. How's about a few laughs? Ha! Ha! You could roll up a good strain. Roll one up and no more pain. The minute you lit up that blunt, I could tell you were a man of conviction, a real deal healer. Fair prices, friendly staff. Wouldn't you like to know just how to grow your own stash? So let me get back to that joint as I flip my bit to my favorite pharmacy. Hey, bartender. Hey, bartender. Hey, bartender. Roll a little bowl.
To all the budtenders out there, you are listening to the Hempress Hour, and we have a caller who's on the air from the area code 423. Hello, you are on with the Hempress Hour. Hello, hello, are you there?
Yes, hi, I'm just listening.
Oh, well, hi. Well, welcome to the show, and what is your name?
My name is Vera.
Vera, and are you an artist, Vera? Are you a, a musician. We were talking about marijuana and the connection to creativity. Do you feel that that's true in your life?
No, I don't do any drugs, and I know that the marijuana, whatever, it's a plant, and it's, you know, I don't have anything. I would not judge anyone that does that, but yes, I am a creative person, and I think that when I am in a natural setting with the earth itself, and I'm talking about like being in the mountains, the forest,
right,
out in the country, yes, I do get very creative, so I start to write.
So you find that being in a spiritual setting such as that can enlighten you and to fuel your creativity in that way, very much as someone else might take a spiritual journey through medicine or through natural based plant nutrients. So you find that there's perhaps a similar feeling of enlightenment or connection to your creativity that way?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do agree with you. A creative person, most likely any artist that I run into, they're very spiritual people.
Right.
Yeah, so it's impossible to be creative and not being very spiritual, because when you are spiritual, basically you, like, out there, like people call it.
Well, sometimes spirituality doesn't translate into creativity such as creating art or creating music or dance or written expression of creativity. Sometimes a spiritual journey is a very private, thoughtful enlightenment that is solitary and not really so much shared with a community as is in the arts. Would you agree with me there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I'm so glad you called in. Are you a listener of Freedomizer Radio?
Yeah, I try to get on here as often as I can, but which is very rare because of my schedule, work, and things
right.
like that. But, yeah, it's been a while since I've catch up with the Proof Negative show.
Right. Well, Proof is on right after the Hempress Hour, so I'm glad you called in early and caught a little bit of a sample of what we're about every Thursday at 5 o'clock, right before Proof Negative. And, you know, I have to thank him for finding the Hempress Hour a home right between, sandwiched nicely between Liberty Underground and Proof. So, but thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back and join us on the Hempress Hour. We talk about hemp, health, happiness, and humor. And it's all about living a life in sync with yourself and finding that which heals you and helps you and makes you happy. So I hope you find that in your own life.
No, yeah, definitely. And I'm also like a herbalist. I do believe in, and
You know the benefits of ancient medicine, as ancient as the hemp plant 10,000 years ago. And thank you for calling. We have another caller on the air. And again, Vera, have a wonderful day, and thanks for tuning into the Hempress Hour. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Okay,
bye-bye.
I'll stay on the line. Thank you.
Thank you. Please do. And we have with us on the air another caller. Hello, you're talking with Helene the Hempress. Is this Ditch?
Yeah, this is your boy Ditch. How you doing?
My boy Ditch. Thank you for calling and for being patient. I wasn't sure if you had hooked up with us or not. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I met Ditch at HempCon, and I was telling our listeners that earlier in the show that part of the wonderful thing about going to an event like this is to really meet the other people that share your passions, that are part of your community, that express themselves artistically and creatively. And I thought with this last issue of The Gem focusing on marijuana and creativity that, Ditch, you would be the perfect guest to lead this discussion, because you are going to be the featured lead act for the Million Marijuana March coming up in May. And why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about this 13th annual event and a little bit about your connection with it?
Well, yeah, you know, as you know, I'm going to be headlining both days. I'm going to do two separate special performances each day. In addition to that, I brought out a bunch of my friends, which are well-known artists and people I know that actually work hard in the game and will actually bring something to the cause. I brought out 40 Glock from G-Unit. We got Raz Kaz coming down as a special guest. Bad Fish, Los Marijuanos. The list goes on. I got OL coming to town from Indiana. We got Big E coming out from Florida. And,
wow.
You know, it's just going to be, it's a two-day, you know, it's a march for legalization, and it's all put on by the Moorish Science Temple of America and the Canacare Consultants and myself. You know, I kind of partnered on with these guys. They brought me on board to headline, and I became executive producer of the event. And, you know,
funny how that happens, right? They volunteer you to do music, and you take it over.
Well, yeah, I do everything, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm going to add a red carpet backstage. We're going to have gift bags for the artists. So it's going to be a really, really great event, a two-day outdoor festival in Los Angeles. It is free. It's May 7th and 8th. The website is millionmarijuanamarch2011.com. That's millionmarijuanamarch2011.com. You can log on and enjoy what we got there. It's a list of all the acts and performers, and hear the music ahead of time, and come out. We're going to have 120 vendor booths. So,
120 vendor booths. That's amazing. And two-day event, it's free, folks. There aren't too many events like this with that kind of talent roster that are free. How do people find the venue? Where is it at?
Well, the venue is Leimert Park in Los Angeles, and, you know, it's over there off Crenshaw and 43rd Street. Not, you know, some people think, ah, Leimert Park, I don't know if I want to go over there. Well, we have a bunch of LAPD officers that are going to be, that we had to hire for the event. So, you know, we're going to have, there'll be plenty of safety there for people and people to enjoy themselves without having to worry about any problems or anything. There'll be plenty of parking, and it's just going to be a really good, peaceful, good time. Some great outdoor music, a lot of positive energy, and a lot of, you know, we're going to try to bring a bunch of my celebrity friends and well-known artists that will come down and support the thing, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, your background is so interesting. You graduated with a degree in legal studies and political science. You minored in sociology and criminal justice. You worked part-time at law firms throughout the years while you were booking shows on the side. And then as you were working to establish yourself in the music industry, you know, you offered such gifts as playing guitar and bass and keyboard. You could perform percussion, do drums. You write your own lyrics. You produce your own beats. You released your first album, 8 years ago, I think. It was called 13 Days. Is that right?
Yeah, 13 Days was my first album that I put together, you know, after playing shows for a while. You know, I decided to put some music together on an album, and it was just like an EP, and it kind of circulated through a store at the time, which was called Suburban Underground. My friend Mike Passmore ran this store out in Chino, California, and we kind of just were distributing out of there, and it became popular, and I started playing shows with, you know, various people, Saint Dog, and I've opened for Cottonmouth Kings at that time, and I just kind of climbed my way up the ladder, and, you know, I every year you learn more, and I've kind of just developed into an artist, you know, full-blown artist. I've toured all over the country and played all kinds of shows people wouldn't have expected me to, like the Players Ball in Chicago and, you know, Mandalay Bay Pool in Vegas on July 4th with Mystic Roots. I mean, you know, I've done the Chino Music Festival, and now I'm headlining this two-day festival, you know. So my career is just really, you know, getting better.
You're happy with the way things are going for you?
Absolutely. Every day is a permanent vacation. Every day is a party and a celebration. It's like every day is my birthday. So my career gets better and better every day. There's always new developments in my career every day. So, you know, it's a blessing. And now being involved in this Million Marijuana March thing, you know, we can kind of, you know, express, and I finally get a chance to do my own festival. I mean, it's not all mine, but you know, I'm running the bands. I'm booking the bands. I'm running the stage, bringing out the celebs, and doing the production. So, you know, I finally get to take the driver's seat with a large scale festival.
And is the music mostly hip hop? Is that the thrust?
No, the music for the festival, my music is mostly hip hop, but there's other flavors in there as well because I'm very versatile in what I listen to. But the festival, we have reggae artists like Bad Fish, and Mad Tab and Loose Nuts. We have hip hop artists, you know, all the way around the spectrum from 40 Glock to, you know, people from different states in the country. From actually one of our rappers is coming out from Canada named Cannabliss.
Cannabliss.
Yeah, he's
coming out. A lot
of
the catchy names out there, aren't there?
So there's all kinds of people. And then we have a rock band called Attica 7, you know, and they're sponsored by Jägermeister. So, you know, it's going to be a very diverse festival, very, you know, a lot of different music coming together at one place at one time, you know.
What kind of crowd do you expect for the event?
Well, last year
your 13th annual one, so last year you had what?
Well, last year I wasn't involved. They've been
doing
it for 13 years. This is the first year they partnered up with me, and you know they know that I'm the best at what I do. You know, I'm the number one underground independent artist. I wouldn't even call me underground. I'm above ground.
You're
but,
above the radar now.
Absolutely, well, I always have been. You know, it's
right.
You know, it's a matter
right.
of people just learn. And once they hear about me, they like it. So, you know, but you know, I'm the number one self-made, self-paid artist that there is, especially in California right now, if not in the country. You know, so you know, they teamed up with me, the best, and you know, I'm good at what I do. So
yeah, you gotta love the confidence.
It's gonna really blow up. I mean, it's already been blowing up. We got this next month here to promote, but the event is just, you know, it's skyrocketing. I want to really give a big thank you to all our sponsors too, because you know we're gonna have some great vendors out there. The Calm Effects Cookbook is coming out, and they're gonna bring their new cookbook. They're actually going to be naming a recipe after me. In the
really, what's it called?
Yes. I'm not sure. They do. I'm Italian, so I'm half Italian, so I like Italian food, and they do all kinds of dishes, and they can be made with or without cannabis. But this cookbook
is amazing. How about cannabis cannoli? Cannabis cannoli.
Maybe something like that. You know, it's gonna have my name in it, my picture. You know, of course, because I'm a big eagle like that. But
well, I mean, that's fabulous. So we're gonna have cookbook people. We're gonna have food people. Musicians.
Yes, I'm going to try and talk them into making some samples of the recipes, because the recipes look really good, to making some samples of the recipes down there without cannabis for people to try, and then, of course,
right.
purchase a cookbook, you know, support my friends.
Perfect.
And then, of course, Chronic Jerky's on board, and, you know, a bunch of other people are on board. Chronic Ice is going to have their new iced tea down there. You know, it's exciting. Homegrown Magazine, I mean, everybody's getting involved, and that's the thing when you do a free festival and you just want to give back and raise awareness, and it's all for a good cause. You know, people want to donate their time, and that's what we need. You know, we're not charging at the door, so we're not making money on this thing. It's strictly for, you know, for the movement.
Well, you know, the Gem should be there, too.
Yeah, well, we need to get you guys down there, you know.
Yeah, the Gem, you know, I'll cover it if I can, which is what I do. You know, I'm covering HempCon from last week, and it'll be in the Gem next month, and, you know, for May, I'll look at your event and certainly want to be there to help you cover it and get the good word out. So I want to talk a little bit about Lethal Tender, which you went on tour, and you started the second company in 2008, and you also filmed and recorded a song called Fresh Off the Pot. I don't think I have that song. I'm going to play a song when we get a little further into our conversation that you did send me, that I'm looking forward to our listeners hearing. But tell me about why you started Lethal Tender, and how did you get the name?
Well, here's the thing. Is in 2007, I was signed on by a producer, an independent producer, who wanted to invest money in me to do an album. And the album concept was Public Intoxication. It was long before I actually got arrested for it. But it was called Public Intoxication. And I set out to pick some artists that I knew personally, I had hung out with, and I wanted to bring down to the studio and do some songs with. So, you know, we created a budget, and we did the thing. And, you know, once we had this album going, it really started to think, hey, this could be really big. So we better get everything copyrighted, and we better protect everything, and we better put all the rights into something we both own. So we both decided to create our own holding company, which basically holds and manages the rights to my music, owns the rights to my music, and if we need to license anything, that's what we go through. So it's basically my own record label, if you will, because
right.
all my promotion, everything is done internally. So, you know, I got a strict team of people I work with, and that's it. And it's, you know, we're kind of like a secret society, the way Lethal Tender Music is. And you know, there's artists beg me every day to sign them, and, I mean, it's just, it's not that type of label. It's all for me. It's all to self-run my machine, my music, my shows, you know. So I came up with the name Lethal Tender. It just kind of popped into my head, and I like the concept, you know. It's kind of like the West Coast Grand Hustle, if you will, you know what I mean? So
it's a good way of putting it. A very unique style, and I'm looking forward to hearing your music. And let's give folks the website again for where they can sample a lot of your tunes. And I know it's also available, your album on iTunes.
Yeah, well, I have two albums now on iTunes. You can look up Ditch on iTunes, and you can look up Public Intoxication on iTunes. Public Intoxication is the one that features Shock G, Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5, Ika Mouse, Cassius, Hot Dollar, and a bunch of other people. So pick that up. But the song you mentioned, it's funny that you mentioned Fresh Off the Pot. Fresh Off the Pot was a song I did with Steve-O from Jackass. And it was actually, you know, Steve-O's listening, he'll remember this. It was the day he got out of jail. It was the last day he ever drank or smoked. And he came down to the studio, and we hung out, and we did this song. And we never released it, but we did this song called Fresh Off the Pot with Big Reg. And, you know, I guess he went sober the day after that and never went back.
How about that? So he's still fresh off the pot, huh, years later?
Yeah, 2 years later, or however long ago it was now, but you know, it's like almost in some part of my mind, I feel like, man, I wonder if I had something that, you know, I said something that scared Steve-O into going sober that night.
Scared
sober.
No,
I know he did it because he needed to clean up. You know, the judge needed him to clean up, and he wanted to clean his life back up. So, you know, God bless him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. Well. Ditch,
we gotta
wrap up because I've got another guest. We're coming towards a half hour, but I did want to give folks the website again and the dates again for the Million Marijuana March with Ditch as a headliner and a whole slew of talented musicians from all across the country and Canada coming to perform on this amazing festival taking place May. Give us the dates again, Ditch.
7th and 8th, Leimert Park, Los Angeles. We want you all to log on right now, jam up our servers. We're waiting for you at MillionMarijuanaMarch2011.com. That's MillionMarijuanaMarch2011.com. I'm waiting to see all of you there. We got music from the artists. We got the lineup on there. And it's just your go-to place for this free outdoor festival.
Yeah, well, we will definitely be plugging that throughout the show. And I will be there, hopefully, with my bells on to take a look and see what's happening, as I love to do. And, Ditch, thank you so much, and continued success in your hip-hop career and your event producing career.
Course, remember to tell them lethaltendermusic.com, lethaltendermusic.com. That's my official website. 3 free mixtapes to download on there. Legion of My iTunes, 50 streaming songs right now. So I'm also waiting for you on there later. You know what I mean?
Okay,
I really
you got
appreciate
it.
The interview. And, let's have a
and
great
we've
time.
Got Ditch, and Ditch, I think I'll have you come back on the show, you know, maybe prior to the event, you know, right before the event, maybe on the Thursday before, you could come back and we could speak again about it and give you a little extra plug.
Absolutely, I'd love that, you know, because we're going to have breaking news every day until the event. There'll be breaking news, so it'll be good to touch base with you the Thursday before the event or something like that.
Perfect.
Awesome.
All right, and you are listening to the Hempress Hour, and thanks for calling, Ditch. And right now, we are going to be up with Tony, and Tony is, I'm sure he's got a great story to tell us. If you've ever thought about what it's like to open a dispensary from the ground up after having a very varied career from as an entrepreneur in real estate and doing different things and coming back home and doing this, opening a dispensary, we're going to be talking to Tony and finding out what makes his dispensary different, special, and very accessible to patients. And, of course, you are listening to the Hempress Hour. We welcome your calls. That number is 347-324-3704. I'm going to open up the switchboard and see if Tony is with us. And, Tony, do I have you on the air?
Hello.
Hi there. Welcome to the Hempress Hour. I am so glad you could share some of your time because I know that this has been literally a hellish week for you as you're opening a brand new dispensary in Orange County. And this is your, is this your opening day?
No, well, we're actually doing a soft opening tomorrow and Saturday. And then 420 will be our grand opening. Obviously, you know, a lot of places are doing a 420 little party. On 420, we will be having Garden Asada tacos from 3 to 7. So if you want to come and eat for free and check us out, 420, it's OCMBC.net.
OCMBC, so Mutual Benefit Collective and Wellness Center. Is that correct?
That is it, yes.
How did I know? I must be really smart. Now, you know what I found was really interesting when we got to talking and you shared a little bit of your background with me. You are no stranger to cannabis. You grew your first cannabis plant when you were just 12 years old in the closet. You knocked out half of a dress and used an 18 fluorescent light to grow. So you've had a little bit of experience early on, and you came out of the closet with it, so to speak, right?
Definitely. That's a good one. I never thought of it that way.
Wow. But your life before that, I mean, you bought your first home when you were only 18 years old, and that's what began your real estate career. And you've been involved in mortgage loans since 1999. In mid-90s, you started a roofing company, hundreds of homes from San Diego to Santa Barbara. You started to flip homes in 98 through 2004. So you worked as a loan processor and an officer, then owner of a management company, and then a loan mod company. So you've had all of this experience in real estate and then even earlier experience with cannabis. And you've kind of been able now in your life to merge the two together, so to speak.
Yes. I also have a taco truck in North Shore, Hawaii called Auntie's the Kind Mexi Grinds, and then a tequila distillery in Jalisco, Mexico that it's a family business, so that's Tequila 55 and Capaz. So I can help you medicate.
On all sides of the fence, it sounds like.
Give you a shot of tequila and then cook you some tacos.
Well, you've got it all covered. You know, something for when I get a little hungry, need a little snacky, get a little thirsty, get a little stressed, need some medicine. What brought you back to the idea that you could open a dispensary in these ever-changing times in Southern California when so much is changing, so much of the litigation is changing? Why now? Why did you think that now would be a good time to open a new dispensary in Orange County?
I opened two for, I won't say the name, but two other ones for other people. And then I saw an opportunity to open my own and, you know, manage my own. I've seen the mistakes that they made in their openings, in their collectives. And I've watched and paid attention and then decided that I could do it better than them.
Well, what kind of mistakes? You say that there are mistakes a new dispensary owner would make. Would that come down to the vendors that they would select for their medicine?
It's not only vendors, because quality is important, but it's more what they allow to do, you know, in their particular location. So, obviously, if you get your medicine, you got to put it in your bag and you go home. You don't medicate in the parking lot. You don't medicate in your car. You
know, right. It's adherence to the policies, the legal laws for dispensary owners, both and their patients. They should be knowledgeable of what the rules of the road are.
Definitely. Then
right.
I see,
so will patient education be part of what Mutual Benefit Collective does?
We want to educate people. We want to help people. We are also the wellness center, so we are networking with a chiropractor, headache pain medicine, massage. We want to do Pilates. We want to do yoga. So every day of the week, we're going to have something different. Just like you have all the specials, we're going to have something different.
So your facility, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to visiting you there, is both a collective and wellness center. So attached to your facility in a separate building, you have the wellness center, the massage tables, a community room. How is it set up, Tony?
It's set up so when you walk in, there's a waiting area, and then once you check in, there'll be another door, and inside the other door, we have it set up. It's just a small room, big enough for two massage tables. So every day, we'll do something different. The chiropractor will come in, and he'll do adjustments from, let's just say, 3 to 7. The next day, we'll have a masseuse there who will do massages. The next day, we'll have, I've got a hairstylist who wants to come in and do haircuts, you know.
And are those services kept low for your members at a very nominal fee?
On a donation basis.
On a donation basis. So based on your ability to pay in some cases, or, you know, a certain standard might be set, a suggested donation. But that's a wonderful thing to offer.
Yeah.
Now,
we want to be a little bit different than some of the other collectives, parentheses, pot shops. I'm looking to be embraced by the community and hopefully stay for a long time.
Right, and I think the way to do that is well put in your mission statement and your goals, which is to support patients by providing safe access to quality medicine as well as education on methods of alternative healing. We believe it is an individual's right to choose natural alternative ways of caring for their illness and conditions. And our goal is to support and educate those who are interested in being involved in the medical marijuana movement. And I know you have great discounts, daily specials, experience opening a collective. Now, Tony, what is this like? I mean, I have opened shows. I have opened plays that I've written, musicals I've done. But I imagine it's the same kind of, stage fright. When you first open the doors and you greet your public, there's a certain anticipation. You want to get it right. You want to make a good first impression. And these are your patients, and this is your dispensary. So it is so important to get out of the gate strong and to make that great impression and to hold by those values of supporting patients with medicine at a fair and affordable price. How are you able to do that for patients? How can you keep the greed out of weed? How do you do that?
By having good vendors, by growing your own is key. It definitely takes tenacity, and it takes drive. If you're not driven into this business right now, you're going to get left behind. I'm working 16-hour days. The opening has been more than what I thought it was going to be when we went in. And
yeah.
I have two partners, and between first locating the facility and making sure that the landlords are on board and you do your corporate paperwork properly, that takes a little bit. Then you get into where you actually find the facility, and you have to have a vision, you have to have a dream, and you have to have an idea in front of you, and you think you can measure the amount of time that it's going to actually take. But when you get there, it actually is going to take you twice as long.
Mm.
You think that there's going to be success, there's going to be failure. You have to be flexible. You have to be willing to listen to other people's ideas. You can't be stubborn, because every idea could be better than yours. So when I went into this with my partner, I already had a floor plan layout, but then he gave me his, and I looked at it, I'm like, I love it. Let's go.
Right.
So then we started framing, drywall, painting. We went with a color scheme, and it's like, I got to say, my partner Ricky and Vidal have been invaluable. I thought I was going to have to do a majority of this on my own, and on top of doing that and meeting vendors and
Enough hours in the day, Tony, to get everything done. And when you're the point person, I mean, the decision maker, along with your partners, it's an awesome responsibility to make the time for new vendors who want to be accessible to you and want to offer you their services, and yet you're only one person, and there's not enough hours in the day, especially when crunch time comes and you're opening the doors tomorrow and you want it to go right. And your experience with the other dispensaries, has that helped you in making this mutual beneficial collective a promising success? Do you think your past experience will lend to this success?
Inevitably, I hope so. But,
yes.
You know, there's always a combination between success and failures. So I tried to see what they were doing and what they were doing wrong, and I'm striving.
You are listening.
I'm sorry. Go on, Tony. You were striving.
I'm striving to make the experience for our patients when they come in smooth, pleasurable, to empathize with them when they come in.
Right. And also, when we talked last week, we had Jen from a Long Beach dispensary, Quiggle Healing Center, and she is a practitioner there. And I asked, well, are there certain questions you ask first-time patients, first-time members that come in, and that will really help direct them to the proper medicine for their medical condition? And I'm sure you carry on that responsibility, that is your priority, to match a patient with the proper medicine, to be able to make recommendations, whether they are coming into you with a condition that could be depression, or it could be migraines, menopause, back pain, AIDS, cancer. There are, of course, specific strains that you would want to recommend based on those parameters. Is that not true, Tony?
Without a doubt. And the person who does that is Whitney Hacker. I hate to say it, I'm just like the quarterback, and I have an incredible team around. I'm the coach.
Right.
Whitney's my quarterback, and I have an incredible team to I can give the ball to, and I have no problem. There's so much trust that I have in them.
Right. I've met Whitney. I know that she is so capable and so caring and compassionate that people, when they walk in the door, are going to be happy to be greeted by her. She will lead them through the proper paperwork and also be able to recommend the proper medicine for the proper medical conditions that your members come in for. And being part of a collective, how is that different than being just perhaps a dispensary? What's involved?
Well, dispensaries are, you know, they call them pot shops. Part of a collective is that, you know, we have a membership agreement to where they come in, and, you know, we check to make sure that their recs are valid, up to date,
right.
And that they have, you know, their California ID. We don't take anybody out of state. And then once we go through there, you know, we're teaching them a little bit about cloning, a little bit about growing, and then the different strains that they're out there. There's so many new things coming out to this industry right now. The edibles, the sodas, the
At HempCon, and I was overwhelmed with, you know, the juices, the edibles, the different methods of ingesting medicine. And because a lot of patients can't tolerate smoke, you know, they can't inhale.
Right.
They need edibles or tinctures or capsules, perhaps, and to be able to offer that is almost, you know, a necessity. You can't just, it's not one size fits all. These are individual patients with individual conditions, and I'm happy to hear that you take the time to find out the person behind the patient.
Well, we had a patient who was a 9-year-old cancer victim, and this just happened recently. So her father called me and says, I need help. She's not eating. She's losing her hair. So I said, let's get her some edibles. And just because she's so young, it's hard to weigh what you're going to give a 9-year-old.
Right. You know? And is it, from a legal perspective, is that something that you are allowed to do with the consent of the parent who requests medication for, as a last resort, as pain avoidance, in that pharmaceuticals and prescribed medications were not working for this 9-year-old cancer patient?
They were giving her Vicodin and some other medicine, and he's not an actual patient, but he wanted for his daughter. So I said, well, you need to go get a rec and a doctor's recommendation, and then come talk to us. And he said the Vicodin wasn't working for her. She it was tearing up her stomach. She wasn't eating. So then he took a half a brownie and ate it himself. And he's about 6 foot, 200 pounds. And then he realized, okay, for a quarter, we'll be fine for her. And he says she ate and went to bed. And I let him know, before you give it to her, make sure she has something in her stomach. And then when she eats it, start cooking. Cook those hamburgers. Let her smell them so she gets hungry.
Yeah.
Within 30 minutes, she said she ate and went to bed and woke up the next morning and felt fine. So they were happy. The mother and father were happy.
Right. Now, that's a whole other conversation as far as how to prescribe for young patients under the age of 18, that, you know, what the legal procedure is, because there are some things that are ever-changing in the laws, and we always want to be careful to do things through legal measures, certainly, especially for those minors.
She had a little issue about it with her parents, and she told her parents first that she wasn't going to do it.
Right. Well, you know, I know of the reverse case when my mother was ill with cancer, breast cancer, and I was back in Ohio at the time, and she was unwilling to do anything illegal, and I totally respected that. Even though an edible, a capsule, certainly would have done so much to alleviate her very severe pain. So we know the benefits of how this plant-based nutrient has helped so many. It has been a miracle for so many. And I'm at least very confident that you are going to work to keep prices down, that having met you, I know you're not about making a quick buck. You are here to establish a much-needed facility to help patients, to reach out, to form this collective where members are a part of the community. It's not... And Tony, let me ask you this. Do they volunteer as part of their membership agreement? Are there certain responsibilities that your members have to the collective?
I would love for them to volunteer.
Yes.
Definitely. I'd love people to donate time. We have open arms. We want to show you and teach you and educate you about what's going on in the industry right now.
Right. And there is a lot to learn. And I feel if there is one thing I would recommend any dispensary, new or old, is to reaffirm the patient commitment that you signed on for, that you are working towards. Make sure your heart's in the right place and that your patients know what their legal obligations are as a patient member and what the dispensary owner's obligations are. For example, I did a piece in the Gem about top 10 tips, don't go there, dispensary tips, if they're doing this, if they're running their business like a late night, you know, drive-through. You know, you got to be careful. Are they safe? Are they providing quality medicine? Are they inspecting it for mold? Are they recommending the right strains? Do they know Kush from your tush? In other words, so I know that I feel confident that you are on the right track. And tell us again the address and location of the dispensary and collective.
The address is 1815 South Main Street, Santa Ana, California, 92705. It's ocmdc.net. You'll find us on the internet that way. I don't know the phone number by heart yet. I'm sorry. But if you
That's
look
all right.
Up
we'll have it looked online. But your opening is tomorrow. And
we are actually doing a soft opening tomorrow. Our grand opening will be 4:20. We'll be doing tacos, carne asada, rice beans, salsa from 3 to 7 on 4:20. So come by. Anybody who wants to come by, you know, we're going to have free tacos. And come check us out.
We will do that, Tony. And lots of good luck to you. And I want to follow up to see how it's going. We're going to check back with you in a couple weeks. And it will be good to follow your progress and follow your patients' progress, too, as you point them in the right direction and you help them get their medicine at an affordable and quality and make sure it's a quality experience
for
them.
We're excited. We understand that, you know, we have the utmost respect for our patients, and we know that when they come in, they want to be taken care of. They make a mental perception of us when they're coming in. We want them to come back. We want
right.
it to be a good experience, and we want them to get the right medicine.
And while I've got you on the air, Tony, I do see a caller, and in case they had a question specifically for you, I'd like to have them speak up. It's from the 641 area code, and caller, you're on the air during the Hempress Hour with Helene the Hempress and Tony. And hi, who do we have on the air with us? Caller. All right, you're not there. That's okay. That happens sometimes. People will call in and I ignore them and they go and medicate and forget to come back. But Tony, it was a pleasure talking with you, and I wish you a lot of good success, and go see Whitney there. They're in Santa Ana, 1815 Main Street in Santa Ana. Santa Ana is the location, soft opening on Friday with a grand opening party and reception on 420. Thank you so much for taking the time, Tony. I wish you all the best, and I'm sure we'll be chatting with you again. You take care of yourself, and we'll talk soon,
Thank
okay?
Thank you. You have a blessed evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. And you are listening to the Hempress Hour. And listen to this, because coming up in May is Hemp History Week. I think you should tune in. And
you are listening to the Hempress Hour with your host, Helene the Hempress. And as some of you know, we are going to be celebrating the second annual Hemp History Week coming up May 2nd through the 8th, 2011. And did you know that America's history is rooted in growing hemp? It was actually Thomas Jefferson who once said, "Hemp is of the greatest importance to our nation." And today, healthy and sustainable hemp products are sold across the country, but American farmers are prohibited from growing industrial hemp as a crop. And what we want to do is to create a new hemp history in this country. History that includes economic opportunity for American farmers who want to grow hemp. And we also want you to be able to benefit from eco-friendly and nutritious hemp products. And that's why we're proud to announce Hemp History Week 2011. And it's a week-long celebration of the benefits of hemp health and sustainability. And again, that's May 2nd through the 8th, 2011. Why not get involved? Join the cause and start planning how you'll celebrate hemp this May. Hemp History Week 2011 will feature events in cities and towns all over the country. Consider organizing an event in your community with support from Hemp History Week and product samples from our great hemp industry sponsors. The campaign will also feature a day of action to encourage the Obama administration to change federal policy and allow American farmers to once again grow industrial hemp. And be sure to check out thehempress.biz for local current updates and events. You're listening to The Hempress Hour.
And you are listening to The Hempress Hour. And we have just a couple minutes left. I would love to thank this week's guest, Ditch, hip-hop master, event maven, LethalTenderMusic.com, the Million Marijuana March in May. And look for that downtown Los Angeles, rather on Crenshaw. Look for it on the website. Get some directions. There's going to be lots of music, lots of things going on, and you don't want to miss that. That's May 7th and 8th. It is totally free if you're a music lover. If you're part of the marijuana community, check out the Million Marijuana March with Ditch headlining activities. I'm sure you're going to like that. I'd like to thank Tony and Mutual Benefit Collective. I know that they are having their grand opening on 420. How appropriate, isn't it? And check them out. They're in Santa Ana. And I am almost out of time. We'd like to thank our generous sponsors, as always, High Quiggle Healing Center in Long Beach and Long Beach 420 Evaluations. And, of course, The Gem Journal for Education on Medical Marijuana. And listen, I hope you're going to have a great week, and come back next week. I don't know who our guest will be, but check it out, and I'm sure it'll be a great show. And always think of, if you have an idea, if you would like to be a guest on the Hempress Hour, let me know. Contact Helene at thehempress.biz and check out the website, www.thehempress.biz. We are here every Thursday right after Liberty Underground and the Moretta Report with Joanne and the gals. Always a very insightful show. And coming up next, I know you're going to want to stay tuned to Proof Negative. And thanks, Doc, again, and Freedomizer Radio for giving the Hempress a home here on Thursdays for your little happy hour from 5 to 6. We will see you next week. Be good to yourself and each other. Bye-bye.